Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 6th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Standard Time, if you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment. Our call-in number is 712-770-4160. And our participant code is 385698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right. And I want to reiterate that one. You know, we're really in bad shape financially. We're literally on a shoestring operation here yet. We're, you know, got a lot of expenses. We've got a lot of things going on. And, you know, I got to find another $1,000 to pay all the bills in the next day or two. So I'm, you know, reaching into my own pocket to get whatever we can. I may even need more than that. But we're falling behind every month. You know, bills are escalating a little, you know, every month, a little more here and there. But we're not really getting that much new money coming in. So, look, if you're not giving $5 a month or more, please do so. If you can afford 10, do that. But everybody needs to get together to work to make this work. And $5 is like coffee and a roll and maybe a donut Just give up once a month. Just give up a coffee, a roll, and a donut. That's all, you know. All right. Let's move on. We got a few things to cover tonight. Let's first move into our scripture for the night. It is John chapter 10. We're going to read verses 1 through 18. John, Gospel of John, chapter 10, verses 1 through 18. Truly, truly, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is as a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him. For they know his voice, and a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he had spake unto them. Then Jesus said unto them again, Truly, truly, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come not that I am come that they might have life, and that they might have life more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is a hireling, and not the shepherd, whom own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf cometh, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is a hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and known of all mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold, one shepherd. Therefore doeth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it up again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. This commandment have I received from my Father. John chapter 10, verses 1 through 18. Okay, I want to talk a little bit. We got lots of papers we've been writing. We're not going to be able to read them all as we go along, I'm not going to read one tonight. But we'll talk some more about some new papers we got going, and if we read them or not is one thing, but people should be going up to read them even if we don't read them. We're working on what I think is probably one of the most important papers that we can work on or ever have worked on. And hopefully we'll be able to define and articulate the message that we're really trying to get out from this paper. And the purpose of the paper is not really for the courts, because the courts, they stick things into their ears. They're really not listening at all. It's really for the people. And it's meant to intimidate them also, you know, not the people, but the people in the court that stick things in their ears. You know, we want to intimidate them, because we'll do that with the truth. It's very simple to intimidate them, because the truth is hard to hear, and they don't want to hear it because they're living in that darkness. But the paper, and this paper, when we get it done, we will definitely read this paper. And I'd like to maybe spend the entire night discussing this paper. And it is, what is the law? What is the law of the land? Okay, people need to understand what the law of the land is. And we may think we understand what the law of the land is, but we really have to define it for the simple person. And even for ourselves, we need that simplicity. We need to understand the difference between, you know, what is a law and what is a statute? What is a code and what is a regulation? You know, I'm really, really elated about this president because this guy understands. Thank God we don't have a politician in office as president of the United States. I never would have dreamed that one man can do so much so soon. And, I mean, he's set these people back years, decades. He's pushing them so far back. They don't know whether they're coming or going. They can't keep up with this guy. And he's just destroying them. And I heard a little bit about some regulations, some new orders that he had put out, executive orders. And he's using them properly. And what he's doing is he's undoing all of the BS that they've created. You know, he can't overturn a statute, and clearly no one can overturn a law, and the government cannot overturn the Constitution. But he definitely can overturn regulations and codes, because those are just policies and procedures written by the agency heads. And some of these things have been written over the, you know, the decades. And when the new leadership comes in, they haven't changed the regulations or the codes, or they may add to it. And really, ultimately, we have the enemy feeding in all this stuff and having it added in. And you get all these regulations and all these people going to jail. And people go to jail for code violations, for regulation violations. My goodness, how can you go to jail for a code violation or a regulation violation? Well, because you don't know what a code is and what a regulation is. It's a policy and procedure. You know, as a contractor or a construction manager, I had policies and procedures, and you follow the policies and the procedures. If you don't work for the company, you don't have to obey those policies and procedures. They have nothing to do with you, only the workers. And what's the penalty if they don't obey the policies and the procedures? You fire them. They don't get a paycheck no more. Nothing different, same thing in office. That's what policies and that's what these codes and regulations are for them to follow. Not for you, not for me. It's for them. And there is no law there. People can't be put in jail for a code violation. They can't be put in jail for a regulation violation. I mean, maybe they could be fined, you know. I can see how they could do that, you know. But that's at the most, and you can't force them to pay that fine. They could be fired, you know. Statutes is a different thing. Statutes have a different kind of a power and authority. So, you know, statutes, they're there for the sole purpose of creating controls and laws for those who are elected and those who are working, for those who are appointed and those who are working for the government. That's what the statutes is for. It's not for you. It's not for me. You know, we're under the law of the law of God is what we're under. We're under the laws of nature. Read the Declaration of Independence. That's what our statement was. That's where we want to be. We want to be under the law of nature, the laws of nature, and of nature's God. And that's what common law is. That's what natural law is. That's what positive law is. And what we're working on right now is a paper that makes this clear. Our big battle, the uphill battle that we have, is people don't read anymore. That's the battle we have. And people speak in, what do they call them, tweets, you know, or a little texting, back and forth texting. Drives me crazy. I mean, you know, usually people text me anything, the best they get from me is the letter K, and that's it. You don't get much more. Occasionally maybe something more, but generally speaking, I'm about to go dead on my headset, I think, so I'm going to have to change headsets, so give me a second to change over to my headset here. I'll try to keep talking as I'm trying to do this. Give me a minute. Gerard, you want to talk while I'm changing headsets?
I don't know what to say. So I stopped texting.
Okay, I got it. Is John, am I coming through okay now?
Yeah, I got it.
Am I coming through okay?
Yeah.
Good? Okay. I had to put my wire set in. Oh, I've been dead pretty quick. All right, I forget exactly where I was, so I might repeat myself, or I might skip something, too. I don't know.
We're talking about that you don't text, you just go K.
The problem is people don't read. And so, you know, the more and more we feed into this technology we have and the simplicity of it and just moving on in life with so many things going on, we have to stop somewhere and make something important to us. Of course, our families and our relationships, of course, especially most with God and then our families and so on, is important, and you need to put your time there. But people should be putting their time someplace for their mind. We have to grow body, soul, and mind. You know, we have to feed it, all three. And you can't starve it. If you starve the body, you're going to die. You know, if you starve the brain, it's going to die. And if you starve the soul, it's going to die. So it's got to be fed, and that's what we need to be doing. But anyway, the bottom line is this paper, the purpose of this paper is to understand the difference between these things. I saw a video that was shared with me. I think it was Jan, you shared it with me, about a guy going into the courts and making a battle and stuff. And then the big thing, and so I'm seeing some other videos, you know, the pointing of the sovereigns, and they don't think they have to obey the law. And that's a battle. That's an uphill battle because people don't understand that you don't have to obey statutes. But if they could see it in black and white, make it crystal clear on paper, and show them what law is and what it isn't. You know, I went through Black's, and in Black's law, there's about 51 different laws, types of laws. I'm pretty sure I exhausted it. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I did. There's a whole bunch of different courts. We don't need to understand all the courts because that'd be even more to try to appreciate. But we need to give an overall of what is law and what one of those laws really have any effect upon us. And on top of that, you know, where does it have effect on us? Does it have effect on us as we the people, or does it have effect on us as people who are working for the government? I mean, those are the key two questions that we really want to ask ourselves. You know, who is under the control? You know, there are certain controls that people are under if they get into certain commercial business because, you know, there's certain controls that we've given Congress to control. And so there are certain regulations if you get into a certain kind of a situation that we've given Congress the authority to control. And there are 18 powers that we've given to Congress. Actually, I think there's a little more than that. There's 18 listed in Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution. But when you read through the rest of the Constitution, you'll find there's a few other little things in there that they've also had the power and the authority over. And you add it all together, it really isn't that much. It's very restricted. So their jurisdiction of writing law is limited. And then the court's jurisdiction is limited. And when you put it all together, they have limited authority, limited jurisdiction over we the people. Yet we have given them almost control over our personal lives, over our personal behaviors. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other thing. You can't do this, you're going to get fined for that. I'll put you in jail if you do this. Don't do this without that permit or that license or this. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And it's all why. The reason why is because we, the people, are ignorant. And we, the people, are ignorant because we don't read. It's that simple. We need to start reading and finding out what's going on. I'm probably the world's slowest reader. I mean, I read very, very slowly. It takes me a while to understand what I'm even reading, and because I want to try to understand everything I can, of course. But being a slow reader and making sure I understand what I'm reading, of course, I make mistakes like anyone else from time to time. No one's perfect. We all have error. But being a slow reader and making sure I understand, I usually remember that, and I'm able to retain a lot of it, or when I need it, it comes out. And it's pretty much that simple. And so speed reading could be good depending on what you're reading. Some reading, you want to take your time. You want to understand each word, each phrase. You want to make sure you got it correct. You know, odd language sometimes. Hard things to understand sometimes is written oddly. So when something's written oddly, you don't want to pass by it. You want to take your time and meditate on it. But I'm not here to give a lesson on how to read. My point is we have to read. And if people aren't going to start reading to understand what their liberty is, what law is, what they need to understand to be able to, you know, put this government back under our thumb instead of us under their thumb, then if you're not going to read, we're not going to be able to do that. So that's where it begins. So it's an important item. So this president understands this, and him going out and really getting rid of some of these codes and regulations and just writing a presidential directive, what do they call it, presidential order, I think it's called. Is that what it's called? What is it called? I think that's what it's called. Anyway, he writes his orders. It's exactly what he should be doing, because all of these agencies operate underneath him. He's got the power and the authority, being the president of all these agencies. Okay, he's got his cabinet, and under his cabinet, you know, his different agencies, right down to sub-agencies, and he controls them all. And the people within those agencies, the leader heads, can change the regulations and the codes and stuff. And if he doesn't like what's going on down there with a code or a regulation, he's got every power and ability and right to make an order to rescind it, get rid of it. It's gone. We don't want that no more. And there, he's probably driving them crazy. I don't know how many people really understand how that structure works. And I'm even talking about the people in the system. They probably haven't written this stuff in a long time. It's been written by lawyers and stuff being just put in place. You know, how often do you go into an office and these regulations are in opposition to what the law is? They're obeying regulations that is denying the law, which the law is the statutes, which is what they should be obeying. So they control the people through these codes and through these regulations. They also and I'm talking about the people who work for them, but they also control us through that, through codes, regulations, and even statutes. We need to understand the difference between them. And if you want to be free, you can't be free. You can't really be free until you understand that. What is the law that you do have to obey? And that generally is written in the hearts of all men. Okay. Let's see. We met a little earlier today. We have been meeting at about 8 o'clock every Monday before these meetings in order to work on structuring National Liberty Alliance. Now, we have leaderships going all the way down into the counties. Okay, everybody might want to go to their to National Liberty Alliance, click on the website, and on the front page, click on NLA Plan. And just scroll down a little bit. And we put together a, you know, sort of a leadership picture, or how would I say this? Just a list of our leadership, okay? And the key part of this whole thing really is getting down to the national coordinator, where we have district leaders. We have four district leaders. And those four district leaders is broken up, one for each one of the time zones. And those district leaders, you know, so there could be two, three, four, five district leaders. It doesn't matter. We have about 15,000 leadership roles. A lot of them are filled. You know, we have people in some, quite a few of them, but, you know, we have a lot more that aren't filled, obviously. But we have a lot of state coordinators. We have a lot of county organizers. We have a lot of district leaders. We probably have enough district leaders, but we won't say we don't have enough. I mean, we don't need any more, because if someone wants to be a district leader, by all means, the more the merrier. So anybody could take these leadership roles. And again, we were talking about this before the meeting tonight. But the district leaders are responsible for the states, to make sure the states get organized. And we'll take the small one of the smallest ones here, which is district number one, which is out all the way on the West Coast there. And district number one covers Washington State, Oregon, California, Nevada, Alaska, and Hawaii. That's six states. And so the job of the district leader is a very simple job. It's the same job as any other leader, and that is to organize. It's the first order of business, is to organize. So these people need to really make sure that we have at least one, bare minimum, eventually two, three, four, and more state coordinators. And right now, I'm pretty sure if you went out to any one of these states, you'd find quite a few state coordinators. We need to make phone calls to these people. That's the job of the district leader. put in an hour a week. You know, if you got two or three or four district leaders working on six states in 1 week, we should be able to easily organize every state within their time zone without a problem, making sure we have two, three, four, or more state coordinators. And if we could do that in a week, then you got two, three, four, five state coordinators. They need to be working on county organizers. You know, let's take a state that has maybe 40 counties, and you got five state coordinators, and you need 40 county organizers. So that's eight calls apiece over the course of a week, just to make sure that these places and positions are filled. And the ones that are filled, that's the first one you want to call. You want to call the ones that are filled and make sure that they're on board and that they're working with us and that they're coming or listening to the Monday night call either on, on MP3 or coming to the meeting and getting them ready to organize. And the bottom line is really where we're heading down to is the grassroots, where we want to get four administrators in each county. And those four administrators is a paid position, okay, paid by the local government, the county. You get money right from the county. We've got all that laid out on how to do that process once we start moving into the courts. We're writing a handbook on this on, you know, what the job of a administrator is, which is generally really just working as an investigative body for the grand jury, and also someone who orientates both the grand jury and the trial jury, prepares them, and then also fills up the necessary paperwork when an indictment goes through, writes it up, makes sure that you're writing the will of the grand jury and not the will of the four administrators. So that's very, you got to be very careful with that, because that's a crime, by the way. We're going to make that clear. But, you know, we don't want to taint these people. We don't want to push them this way or that way. They have to make their own decision. We have to free them. And we are writing a handbook on how to deal with all of these situations, how to write the papers, how to write a paper for, you know, an indictment and so on. And of course, we'll always be here for advice. And if we don't have the answer, we'll find the answer. But the whole point of National Liberty Alliance had always been, from its inception, continues to be, and will never stop until we achieve it, and that is to empower the grassroots, uncontrolled by any upper leadership, true grassroots freedom leadership. We want people on the grassroots level to have total control of whatever it is going on in their towns and their counties and collectively within themselves in their state. They need to be the decider of things. And and nobody else could know what's better for them than them. And they need to take control of their courts. We have the same thing with the committeemen, which we don't talk much about the committeemen, but in the near future, once we're in the courts and the development is moving on, we're going to be pushing very hard on the committeemen side of things. We already started that process with what's called the Committee of Safety, which is the process that our founding fathers used in order to create this great nation of ours. And in 1789, these committees of safety morphed into what we know as the committeemen today. And unless you're in New York, I doubt you have an elected committeeman in your entire state. And I know a lot of people will argue with me, but I can debate anyone and I'd win it. They may not admit to it, but I would win the debate because they have completely destroyed the entire process. I haven't seen any state yet doing it properly. And New York, some of the states are very close. They look pretty good. They look like they're doing it right. But when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, they're not doing it right at all. So no one's really elected. And that's part of the process on how they took it over. These people think that they're elected committeemen, and they're not elected committeemen. They've joined a private organization called the Republican or the Democratic Party, and the other minor parties also, but the two big ones are the Democrats and the Republicans, of course. And so all they've done is join the club of the elite in order to get the will of the elite in, because you're only going to get stuck with the candidate that they want you to get. You will not get a candidate in on your own. Occasionally they get by, like Trump. You take someone like Ron Paul that got into Congress numerous times. So you do get them in from time to time. We do see a few good guys, but generally speaking, they're just nothing but a bunch of criminals. And I hate to say that, and we're not political at all. We're just stating the facts. These people belong in jail. They're taking money. They take your vote. They tell you a bunch of lies. They don't do anything they say they're going to do. They take your money to run their campaigns. And then when they get into office, they take more money from the special interest groups to do their will instead of your will. And they just get fatter and fatter and fatter. And we get become more of a slave, dumber, dumber, and dumber. And it's pathetic. I speak to myself first on this, too. We're pretty pathetic, you know. But I've woken up. I think most of the people here that are listening and, working with us are waking up or have woken up. And we need to wake a whole of a lot more people. We need to wake up our children. We need to wake up our schools. We need to wake up our local communities. We need to bring honor and justice back into the courts. And therefore, it'll be right into our whole process, our political process, and eventually into the world, because America will respond lawfully, like they should be. Because right now, as we all know, even America as a whole is not responding lawfully in the world. And that's another subject matter, which we'll not discuss at the moment, but it's another problem. But you know what? You go to the core, you go to the foundation, you go to where the rubber hits the road, you make that right and build upon that, and everything built upon that will get it right when you get to the top end. You just got to do the right thing. You got to obey the law. It's that simple. You don't get to choose. You don't get to pick and choose. And that's where we need to go. And that's why we have got to build this structure. Again, we have a lot of these positions already filled. We have a lot of we probably have every state coordinator necessary already in place. That's probably, I know we do, okay? And we have a lot of county organizers, a lot of them. I'll bet you we have more than a third of the counties of the entire United States covered. The point is a lot of people have fallen asleep. It's time to wake them up. They need their wake-up call. You need to be the person to wake them up. If you're not involved and you're not doing nothing, you know, don't think the other guy's doing it. We all have to do it. We all have to play our role. And we're only asking for an hour or more a week. That's all. You know, if you can call 5, 6, 7 people in an hour. You're not going to go there and spend an hour on the phone with each individual. You're going to be on the phone for 5 minutes. If you're on the phone for 10 minutes, if you're on the phone for 10 minutes, you can make 6 calls a week. You know, you got 100 people making 6 calls a week, that's 600 calls, okay? And if you have, if you have 500 people making 6 calls a week, that's what, 3,000 calls or something? Whatever the math works out to be. So we got to get involved. Don't think the other guy, don't put the weight on someone else, you know? Right now, the weight is on a few people to pay the bills, okay? And it's becoming too heavy. We need people. Everybody should be given $5. $5 a month. Come on. Everybody can do that. Everybody can give an hour a week. Everybody can give $5 a month. Now, there are exceptions to every rule. I understand that. And so occasionally you have someone, you know, that's on a $600-$700 a month budget. I don't know how anyone can live on $700-$800 a month. $700 or $800 is usually the lowest in Social Security. And maybe you get some food stamps. I don't know how anybody can live on that. But people do. They're able to get by. And I don't know how they would be able to afford, to give $5 a month out of that kind of an income. And yet, you know, we do have people that are making $700-$800 a month. And they are given $5 a month. I think we should think about that. How many people are making $600-$700 a week and are not given $5 a month? Anyway, I think we should think about that. We need to understand where our priorities are. So anyway, everybody can do that. Everybody can put that $5 in. Everybody can put their 1 hour a week in, and we can get this job done. If just the people that are listening right now, if half the people who are listening right now responded, just half, right now responded, and put in an hour a week, call up Jan, and Jan may be able, may not be able to take all the phone calls. There are other administrators out there. You know, we'll work those things out. You call Jan, he may push you over to someone else, but you talk to people, you get it up, get the information going. But if everybody put a weekend, you call Jan up, and he gives you, you know, he'll tell you what state, you know, you tell him what state you want to work, and you work out the workload, and you make your 6 calls a week, or whatever, or 8 calls a week, or 10 calls a week. You make those phone calls. If everyone, if half of the people listening right now did that, we would be completely organized before the end of the month. We'd probably be completely organized in 2 weeks. We would have the whole structure filled, and that's where we need to get. We need to get this structure filled. We need to save America, and it is up to you people to save America. You've got the education. We've got the resources. We're in place. We got everything ready to go. We're in the courts. Everything's ready to go. And when that time comes, when we get that flow of people, that landslide of people, start to move in here, we need to make sure we can control those people, because we've got people coming in who have not become educated. Anybody that's been coming here should be getting educated. They should be coming to understand things. They should be coming to realize the principles necessary to have liberty, the responsibilities that are involved with liberty. You know, liberty can only... this kind of a republic that we have, which is one republic under God, okay? This kind of a republic that we have can only be for a morally minded people. Benjamin Franklin, I believe it was, that told us that. You know, what was it that Benjamin Franklin said when he came out? You know, you got a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. What's required of a republic? Well, I'll tell you what's required of a republic. First of all, some of your time. You have to be involved. You need to become a committeeman at least once in your life. Sometime in your time period in life, you should be a committeeman. It's not a big deal. 60 hours a year. 60 hours a year. That's about it. That's my estimated time. I'm a committee man, been a committee man for quite some time. But 60 hours a year, okay, maximum amount of time put into it. What do you have, 1 meeting a month, maybe? Some places only have 1 meeting every 2 months. Depends on the size, what's going on, you know? And then during the election time, you're involved in the election. Not campaigning for individuals, campaigning for statesmen. You get to interview the people who are going to run the country, the people that you're going to put into these offices and to control these things. You get to interview them. You're the boss. That's what it's about. Be the boss. Everyone should do this. We need to train our children. Everyone should have an automatic weapon, a military-grade automatic weapon, because you're part of the militia. Everybody should be trained in it. We need to get the process back where we all go to a boot camp at least 1 month, or once in our life when we're young, maybe 8, or it doesn't matter what age you are, but, you know, as children come to a certain age, they should go to boot camp for a month just to learn how to become part of a process in order to protect this nation. You know, the New York State Constitution tells us that the people, it is the duty of all people of New York to protect the borders and New York, of all the people. It doesn't even discern between men, women, and children. It says all the people. So it's the duty of all the people. I agree with that. Everyone could do something. Nobody has to, everybody doesn't have to be at the front lines. You know, matter of fact, just the fact that we're there makes the point that we'll never have to be at the front lines, because you can't take a nation down if everyone is armed and prepared and ready. And once a year, everyone should go away for a weekend or two or something, you know. And again, it's your duty to be a militiaman. It's your duty to be prepared. It's your duty to be a committeeman at least once in your life. It's your duty to respond to the call when you get called for the jury, whether it be grand jury or trial jury. It is your duty. And if you don't do it, you don't deserve liberty. Nobody, people who do not do these things don't deserve liberty. And that's why we're a mess. That's why we don't have the blessings of liberty no more. We've got the curse of God. The finger of God is upon us, I believe. That's in my heart. But we can turn that around. It doesn't take the whole nation to have to turn to do the right thing and to step up. It just takes a few. That's all it takes. The people to step up and get the ball running. And we start bringing our children under the proper rule, bringing them up morally minded instead of the way they're coming up these days. You know, the schools are demoralizing your children, in case you didn't know it. I'm sure the people here listening know this. They're demoralizing our children. They're demoralizing us. You don't know the news. I listen, you know, I my blood pressure goes up when I listen to the news. I just can't take it no more because it's not news. It's not it's propaganda. It's lies after lies after lies. It's so good to hear a president calling them for what they are, liars. And, you know, fake news, because that's what they are. So we have to go struggle to figure out what the real news is. And it's a problem sometimes, especially when we look into some of these cases. It's a real problem trying to figure out what the truth is and getting it straight so that we don't get egg on our face when we go into the court, you know. And that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be. These news people should be in jail. That's where they should be. They should be in jail with the judges. They should be in jail with all of these crooked politicians and legislators. That's where they should be. Maybe that's why we have all these jailhouses now, so we can house them. You know? But in any event, okay, we need to organize. We need to communicate. You can't communicate unless you have an organization to communicate to and through. We need to communicate what? An education. To where? To the grassroots. Not just to ourselves. We are the grassroots, but we're just part of the grassroots. We need to organize in order to communicate to the grassroots, and that's why we need to build this structure, and we need to do it now. And when we get that, that slide, that landslide, and the people start to move in, because believe me, at some point in time, when it's understood what we're doing, and we have a certain place to be here with this, what we're doing, people are going to come in here because they're going to see power. We're going to get a lot of egotistical individuals. And we either have to change them or repel them. And we have to be able to realize that we should be able to change most of them. But some of them you won't be able to. But the last thing we need is 100 or 1,000 egotistical tyrants running around on a grassroots level, destroying everything, abusing everything. Because, again, you know, these positions we're talking about is powerful. It carries a lot of weight and clout. So purpose, when we get down to the bottom line, when we get down to NLA in a nutshell, it gets down to one thing: empowering the individual on the grassroots level. That's what it's all about. That's the bottom line. And you can't do that unless we can get the message down to the grassroots level. And if you can only get it down to a county here and a county there, we can't succeed. America is 3,143, I think, counties strong. I'm taking a quick look. 3,133 counties. We need to get down to 3,000 plus counties. We need to get the message to down there. We need to get the people to step up. And we only need 4 people in the county. That's about 15,000 people. You know, some counties will need a little more than 4 people because you have counties like the Bronx or Brooklyn, or Queens, you know, and you're going to need a lot more than 4 individuals for those counties. But generally speaking, the counties up where I'm living, Dutchess County, Orange County, Ulster County, Greene County, and so on, those counties there, they only need, 4 maximum. Okay, and so you need 4 administrators. So we need about 15,000 administrators across this nation. That's all we need. We got what? 300 million people, I think, something like that in the United States. I'm sure it's more than 300 million, but it's about 300 million people in the United States. We're only looking for 15,000. That's all it takes to take this nation back. And remember, these positions, you know, everybody that takes a position, you live in a county, you should be a county organizer yourself. Every person should be a county organizer because that's your neighborhood. That's where you're at. You know, you work, if you're going to be a committeeman, you're joining the county committeeman. Yeah, you're working in a committeeman in your town, but you're working together with your whole town, your county. You know, you come together, you know, every so often on a county level to get together to discuss things as committeemen. Same thing, you know, when you're working as Committee of Safety, which is the, you know, the preliminary before becoming the committeeman, which is what we're doing now, because that's the purpose of building the Committee of Safety, is to get the towns onto the right, into the right place and the right state of mind and the right focus and an understanding the, you know, the power structure necessary, especially during an emergency. But eventually those particular individuals will become the committeemen, the first order of committeemen back to the elected positions again in order to take control of the political process and really, you know, just get involved with statesmen. You know, committeemen should never be hanging a sign for a politician. Yeah, you're gonna carry their petitions if they're going to be statesmen, but they can carry their own signs. They'll hang up their own signs. We don't do that. We may hang up a few signs in a few key strategic areas to remind people, hey, voting coming up on such a date. Don't forget, you know, that kind of thing. National Liberty Alliance plans on getting very, very sophisticated with its website to define every elected position that is in America at all levels, whether it's, you know, on the village, town, city, county, state level, federal level. It doesn't matter. Every position, to define them. And to lay out the structure and what positions are coming up for election and what election districts where people can come and they can read, you know, a 500-word essay written by the individual running for office that we, as the committeemen, the people who are committeemen at the time, are going to bring and put onto the ballot. So we will run the necessary. We'll put up for them on the website a 500-word essay. And then they can have a place to go to their website. We're going to demand. And again, what does that office do? What is that job? What is that person's job? Do they get to, appoint people? Who do they get to appoint? And what's the powers and the authorities of the people they appoint? You know, we need to know these things because this is civics. We should know how the structure of our government works. We're so stupid, it's pathetic. How many of us go to the election booth and just, we used to go down the R line, you know? Me, when I go, you know, yeah, I got a few choice people here or there, rarely many, you know, one or two possibly. But generally speaking, I look to see if they're elected in office at the time, because if they're in office, I'm voting for the other guy. That's how I've been voting for quite some time now, because I'm sick and tired of it. I just want to change the whole process. And again, you know, we should be knowing what we're doing. We should be voting for people because he sounds like a good guy. He looks like a statesman or a stateswoman. Yeah, they got some good ideas, you know? And then once we get them in there, we need to control them. Committeemen control them. Do you know that the committeemen can remove anybody, including the president? Well, that would take a big job to do the president, but it could be done. Could be done. Committeemen can remove anybody in office at any given time. All they have to do is run a petition. Once they get the petition, they get a certain percentage of signatures in relationship to how many votes they got and to get elected. Once they get that certain percentage, 90 days, votes come up, and that person will be pulled right out of office. Okay? It's called the recall. And that could be done to the President of the United States. If the committeemen across the nation got together to pull a president out, they could do that. That's government by consent. We decide who gets into office. We decide who gets into the ballot. We decide who's going to stay in office or not stay in office. We get to decide to give them the phone call and say, hey, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You start doing what you're supposed to be doing, or we're not going to carry your papers the next election coming down the line a couple of months from now or next year or whatever the case may be. That's government by consent. We, the people, get up there and we indict these people and we immediately remove them out of office for bad behavior. Bad behavior is not obeying the Constitution. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Either they're obeying the law and they're lawful or they're lawless. And if they're going to be lawless, we indict them. And if we indict them, we move them from office. And guess what? That's government by consent, isn't it? That's powerful. We put them there to do a job. We shouldn't have to do their job for them. They're supposed to be there to do the job, and we should expect that that job should be done. And it's not being done. And you know what? We don't even know what they should be doing, do we? We don't even know who's writing the papers, who's writing these laws. You know, some of these things that we've seen coming out, like here, the Patriot Act or the SAFE Act up here in New York, those laws probably have been written 30 years ago. They've written these, been writing these laws for 50 years, and it's just they're sliding this in when it's ready. Okay, it's time to push that one in. Yeah, they're primed for that. They'll suck this in. They'll go for it. Yeah, let's push that in now. You know, because they're building a prison for us. They're constructing a statutory prison to lock us down. When that iron fist closes down, it's done. But now that iron fist is about to be broken. I think it is broken at this point. We've got the upper hand. We can make the moves. And it gets back to two things. 1 hour a week and $5 a month. Gets back to that simplicity, because what we're doing is that important. We got a president who's doing the job, and he's pushing down, and we got to push up, and we could take it back, but we all got to do our own job. All right, that's all I got for that. Let's see what else we got going here. Jan, are there any announcements or any questions or anything?
No, I didn't have any announcements or questions. I guess Robert B. has an update on the Western Patriots. Other than that, I don't really have anything tonight.
Okay, let's take on Robert. Go right ahead, Robert.
Robert, where are you?
Robert.
I'm unmuting him now. Can you hear us now, Robert? He's unmuted on my board.
Yeah, he looks unmuted here, too. Maybe I put him to sleep.
Well, that's not good.
All right, well, look, if he pipes back in, we'll get him. We got a few other things to do.
I'll keep an eye.
Gerard, you got anything here to add to any of this? Mr. G? Boy, I feel alone today. I don't know what's going on.
We've been deserted.
Maybe he's hanging out with Robert.
That's a possibility. They're probably Skyping.
I'll give him just another second before we move on to our next. Let me see if I have anything else here. Oh, yeah. Look, we you know, other than these other positions, you know, we also have all these committees going on. And these committees are important. I say everybody needs to put an hour into what we were talking about. And if they want to put more time and then an hour into doing those phone calls, definitely do that. But anything more, get into the committees, okay? We need people in the committees. We got bloggers. We need more bloggers. We need people to help feed stories to bloggers, people who want to learn how to be a blogger and wants to get some information on stories. You know, we had someone we were talking to earlier today who had some information on some of the presidential orders that was just went out, and we need to know those things. That information, if someone has that kind of information that they see something happen, you know, get it to the blogger and work with that person if you want, or just get the information to them so that they can make sure that they maybe write a story on it and get it going. We have a news and so we're gonna have a page where we're gonna have some bloggers talking about what's going on around, you know, in the country here. We also, I'm sure a lot of us know already, we're getting to putting together a TV program now. And we're working on that. Hopefully that's going to be up soon. I'm not sure exactly where that's at, but there's a lot of things to work out there, so they're working it out. And we'll see how that goes. So we'll be getting information out that way also. Of course, we have also the courtroom observers. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the courtroom observers. There are certain things, and you know, we haven't really put a real good control or a monitor on that. But I want to tell you, this is how I do things. If I get a ticket for something, and I don't get a ticket often, but, you know, I've got my full of tickets over the past years, and I write one paper. I don't go into court. I just don't even bother. I write one paper to the court. And for me, about 50% of the time, Again, it hasn't been that much, but about 50% of the time, I never hear back from that court again. I never hear about that ticket, nothing. The other 50% of the time, they ignore my paper, and they want me in court, and they want me to pay the fine. Well, if I got to go to court to pay the fine, I'll go to court. If I could do it through the mail, I'll do it through the mail. I pay the fine. My time is more important than to go and fight a traffic ticket or something like that. It's just I got more important things to do. Yeah, I don't want to do it. If I didn't have anything else to do, then maybe I'd go into the... And I did do this before in the beginning. I learned that way. So, I mean, I don't want to knock people who are doing it. But we also don't want to waste our courtroom observers maybe to take off time from work in order to go to court for someone's traffic ticket. You know, we want people to take off from court to help people out that are in serious trouble, okay? So that when the call comes in, they actually do go out to help, because if they get into trouble, they're going to need our help. Our habeas corpus is the same way. You know, we want to help people to get out of a situation where they're being threatened with losing their home, going to jail, you know, something like that, losing their home to taxes, losing their home to the mortgage companies, potentially going to jail for some other silly, stupid statutory, problem, code violation or something, you know. And that's what we want to use this for. So I want to get that point out. We need to choose our battles. We need to, you know, really be serious about what is important and what isn't and where we need to put our time. If you got the time to spend to go fight traffic tickets and going back week after week after week, and believe me, I've seen it happen, and I've been involved with it in the beginning too, my way, that way, because that's, you know, we all seem to enter in kind of on that level. Well, a lot of us do anyway. And if you took all that energy that you put in there and put it into National Liberty Alliance, we can solve the problem. You see, let's solve the problem. Let's win the war. Certain battles we don't need to win. You know, if they take control of a certain hill, to hell with them. Let them have that hill. As long as we win the war, we'll get that hill at the end. It doesn't matter. Fix the law, and you fix all the problems of the nation. I don't care what problem you have, what political, what judicial problem you have. You fix the law, you get the law to be obeyed and applied. You fix every problem in America, and America will be respected again, and we'll fix the problems that America has as a whole from nation to nation. And I'll bet you dollars to donuts in no time, nations after nation over time will turn to the same kind of a republic that we have. They'll want common law too, when they see the power and the growth from that. So anyway, we need to put our efforts in the right place. Was there another subject I needed to cover that had come up, Jan?
There was that the basically? Issue on people who are NLA members and sovereign citizens and that sort of thing. Did you want to go into that?
Well, yeah, I don't think we really have that problem. You know, we all get stuck in the sovereign citizen movement thing, you know, and I'm a sovereign, okay, but I've learned to not talk like that because they try to play that game calling you a sovereign citizen. And I don't have a problem using the word citizen either, but I wouldn't use it in court, that's for sure. I call myself the people, and so it's safer to say people, and I don't shy away from the word sovereign, though. We're the sovereign people. Matter of fact, that's a statement we used quite a bit in one of our last papers. We're the sovereign people. But look at, you know, we got to be careful you don't get into that fiction. That's where it appears to be radical. So we don't want to get into the radical side of things. We got to know when to back off and what makes sense, because winning the battle is not going to win the war. Winning the war is going to win the war. And there's only one way to win this war. I don't know of any other way to win this war. Even with all that Donald Trump is doing right now, he is one person. He cannot win this war. I don't care what he does and how far he pushes them back. Eventually, that evil will stick its head back up again and take back over again. The only way you can prevent that evil from coming up is to prevent lawlessness. That's the only way you can do it. And so it always gets back to what we're doing. There's only one way to save this nation and keep it. You know, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. A republic, if you can keep it. And the only way you can keep it is to take control of it. And the only way you can take control of it is to have that government by consent to be that committee man and to be that jurist and to do your job and take back a nation. And we got to do this by building administrations. Four people in every county across this nation. And again, I'll repeat it again and again and again. A paid position, a professional position, a powerful position. And it should be a very good paying position, no less. It's a career position. And but look at, we have hundreds. What do we have, 800? How many people do we have signed up to be county administrators, Jan? Do you recall what that number was?
Hold on a sec. I can look it up. It's on my chart. State coordinators, county organizers. We have, as I scan down a long ways, we have 1,271 county organizers.
Okay, but how many do we have going in for become administrators, county administrators? Do you have that number, or you don't have that number?
That number I don't have. We had 978 people going for grand jury administrators.
Okay, now let me just say something here. Those 900 people are not active. I promise them, I hope they're all listening or they listen in at a later date, I promise them I will do everything in my power to prevent them from taking those positions, okay, because they're not doing anything now. They're not educating themselves, they're not participating, and I don't know what it is that they're planning on doing to get into those positions. We need to call these people up and they need to take their name off the list, or get busy and doing things. They need to not only educate themselves, they need to be informed, they need to be involved. Okay? Because being involved and being informed and organizing, communicating, and bringing things together is part of the prerequisitional requirements to become that administrator. Okay? And so just checking a box and over a course of time taking the tests, you know, taking the courses, and doing absolutely nothing is not acceptable in my book. Okay? We have 900. If we had those 900 people all active doing right, we'd be done in a week. 1 week, we'd be totally, we'd have the whole nation totally organized in 1 week. 900 people working the phones in 1 week, we'd have the whole nation. Are you kidding me? Each one of them making 6 to 7 calls would exhaust our membership alone to get involved. Okay? Right there. So, people need to do what people need to do. We can't get a free lunch here. We can't get a free ride. Liberty is not free. Liberty and ignorance doesn't work. You can't have it. You can think you can have it. You can't have it. It's like trying to be immoral and have liberty. You can't do that either. You can't have it. You can't have liberty unless we're blessed. We get the blessings of liberty. Our founding fathers understood that. We made a covenant with God in the Declaration of Independence. We declared that it's a blessing, and it's the government's job to protect that blessing, right in the preamble of the Constitution. Very clear. Our founding fathers understood it. They all spoke about it. They made very lots of quote after quote after quote about this, about morality, about a relationship with your maker, about the creator, all of this. It's clear you can't have it unless you're doing the right thing and doing it. It's just not free. It comes at a price. Sometimes it comes at the price of blood. You know, for many years, I thought that's how we were going to have to end up getting it. You know, I've always been looking at the peaceful road, and we put together National Liberty Alliance as a peaceful plan to take back this nation through education, communication, organization, and being consistent in what we have with principles, the sense of honor, the sense of justice, and the sense of mercy, and resting in the fact that God will do the rest. The rest is His job. We just have to do those things. And everything else is up to God to make it work, to make everything click, and to move us in into the right time to do whatever has to be done if it be His will. And that's always been my opinion. And that's how I've been focusing and going forward. Meanwhile, I have everything I need to get ready if I have to spill blood, and I don't want to do that. Nobody wants to do that. But we all need to be ready for that. And so I thought for quite some time that it could possibly end up that we're going to have to spill blood to take this nation back. And not that we would start the first fire. It's always the evil that shoots the first bullet. And it's always good that tries to restrain from continuing and allowing that to escalate. But nevertheless, at some point, our founding fathers, they couldn't hold it back no more. And they had to take it back by blood. And they did. And Jefferson reminded us of that. That the what was that quote with Jefferson, that something of liberty has to be paid for with blood every
so
often.
Has to be refreshed occasionally with the blood of patriots or something like that.
There you go. That's it. It's close
that's
enough.
The Tree of Liberty.
The Tree of Liberty. There it is.
Yeah.
Close enough. Okay. So we need to know, understand that. We now have an opportunity. I think we're past the blood now. I think we can do it now with the momentum that President Trump has pressed upon this nation and what he's doing from there. If we do our job, there's no doubt in my mind we're going to do this without firing a shot. There's no doubt in my mind we're going to have all these criminals in jail. I mean, after all, they built them. We might as well use them. Let's put them there, you know? All right, Gerard, Dada, you're back. You got anything to pipe in here before I move over to Brent?
No, I'm drawing a blank at this point.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to move to Brent. Brent, are you going to be speaking today? Because I know you've been traveling a little bit, and last week you were traveling.
I'm here.
Okay,
I'm
so
here.
Let me introduce
you. Can you hear me?
You.
Yeah.
We can hear you. Okay, we got Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of the book, Excellence in the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic, and after that, well, Gerard, I'm going to do is I'm going to open up while Brent's speaking. Maybe we'll open up the, no, we'll leave it alone until he's done, but I'll let you take the controls, okay? We'll move to Q&A. Let people get into Q&A now. I'll start the Q&A. Okay, so you got the what do you call it? Brent, go right ahead.
Thanks, John. This is Brent. John said a while ago that you can win the battle and lose the war, and it popped into my head immediately the words of Justice Joseph Story. Apparently he liked to write poetry, but he said, what worth 100 posts all maintained the skill if these all held, the foe is victor still. All scattered fires end in smoke and noise, the scorn of men and the idle play of boys. Keep then this first great precept ever near. Short be your speech, your matter strong and clear. And he was a man who had listened to combat by trial, instead of trial by combat. Combat by trial, he'd heard hundreds, thousands of arguments in court. And he concluded for himself that brevity was important, but even more than that, it's important that a fellow know what the objective is that will win the war. Killing a few soldiers on the other side won't win the war. If the force isn't placed upon the objective that controls everything, what's the use? That's his point. And not only is that true in physical battle, but it's true in the ultimate battle of life and the ultimate battle of if you want to live in a free land, a fellow has to be able to sort out what's important and what isn't, what the real objective ought to be and what it isn't. There's much flailing and screaming and gnashing the teeth about things that are not important. And it's my job to discern what's important and get away from the activity that's unimportant. That's your job too. That's not as easy as it sounds. God tells us what's important, what will win. We have our manual of instructions for battle. And words are of prime importance, not just any words, but the right words. Well, I'm going to talk about true law here, a according to our U.S. Congress, they did hit the nail with their heads on this one. They decided what our organic, they called it the organic law. That's what folks say. What does that mean? That means the most fundamental truth that we have comes in two volumes, the laws of nature, unwritten in creation, unwritten in the nature of things, our common law, our law of the land, and then the second volume, God's revelation of his will to how he wants men to maintain order in the midst of battle. And battle, by the way, is never ceasing. We will never get away from it. If we ever do, we're dead. It is the stuff of which life is made. And the weapons of our warfare are not first physical weapons. And that's what he wants us to focus on. He does not want us to focus on bloodshed unless it becomes inevitable. He wants us to focus on doing it through his order, his way of doing things by ordering our lives according to the orders of the God of all order. The laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things, and the laws of nature's God, as Blackstone tells us, written in the Bible. Our United States Declaration of 76, according to Congress, is part of our fundamental law. It is the observations of men, unwritten in the nature of things, but observed and written down. It's not the Bible, it's the observations of men. But men are obligated, you and I are obligated, to observe the way things are, and they will not change. What really works and what doesn't? What's important and what isn't? The Declaration of 76, some people say Jefferson wrote it. He was very proud of it. He wanted to be remembered for having penned it. But he himself acknowledged, and others have noticed, that much of what he wrote was lifted from John Locke's Second Treatise on Government, John Locke. And John Locke, said Tom Jefferson later on, he said he was one of the three men he admired among all men that ever lived. John Locke. Well, who was John Locke? John Locke was the son of a common lawyer in England. He was the student of John Owen. John Owen was the foremost Puritan of his day. John Locke was a biblicist from start to finish. He wrote a commentary on the Bible, not given much attention, amazingly, but he was a Puritan. John Locke was a Puritan. What does that mean? That means that he was Reformed. That means he was part of the Reformation. That means he was Protestant to the core. That means that to him, the Bible was the most particular revelation of true law. And he observed true law and wrote down what he thought about it, the Second Treatise of Government. John Locke was a product of all, also he himself, and an admirer of the Scottish Enlightenment. The Scottish Enlightenment, which overtook all of the English-speaking world, it arose out of Scotland, it coupled with Puritans in England, and produced the things that brought about, ultimately, the migration of the Puritans to America and the beginnings of our own country. The product of the Scottish Enlightenment, and that phrase, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, referring to the revelation of God, the revealing of God of his will for man, unwritten in the nature of things. That second volume is Will for Man, written in the Bible. The Scottish Enlightenment, which grew out of the Scottish Reformation, which established the Bible in Scotland as supreme authority, final rule for life, period. And then after that, out of that arose an attention to the laws of nature's God, and education became all important during the Scottish Enlightenment. The Scottish Enlightenment of the 18th century came up with the idea of the high school. The high school came out of the Scottish Enlightenment. They had high schools back then. Adult education at night came out of the Scottish Enlightenment. The universities were filled with adults wanting to go to class at night, but they had to work during the day. And they came up with that idea. We're still experiencing all that yet today. The whole junior college movement in America is part of the result of the Scottish Enlightenment, where folks can go to school all their lives unfortunately, much of it's miseducation today, but it wasn't that so much that way. So not so much that it's got in the Scottish Enlightenment. But the Declaration of 76, that's what has become a touchstone to us Americans, because Tom Jefferson wrote it down in the form of a common law complaint, a legal complaint, a writing of legal significance. This Declaration of 76 is no small matter, and what's ignored about it, my humble studied opinion, is that it's organized to the eye teeth, and it's not paid attention to much, the organization of our Declaration of 76, put together, not haphazardly, very smoothly, unlike Magna Carta, by the way. Magna Carta, one thing that strikes you about Magna Carta when you go to look at it real close is that it's but disjointed, written in a hurry, disjointed. The Declaration of 76 is not disjointed. Not that Magna Carta didn't say a lot of important things. Not that it is not a solid stepping stone in the long history of our common law going back long before Magna Carta. But Magna Carta was slammed together piece by piece by Stephen Langton. By the way, another biblicist, the man who gave us our chapter divisions of our Bible, drafted Magna Carta, Stephen Langton. Well, the Declaration of 76 begins, the outline of it, we'll talk about that a little bit, get the big picture. I'm hoping we can continue to talk about it. I'd like to go through it clause by clause, blow by blow, and just talk about each of the phrases, what they mean, what was going on. Very much pertinent right now. That's the beauty of our Declaration of 76. Its first principles, the things of which it complains, are perennial. The threats never stop. They're always there. Starts out talking about the laws of nature's God. Chapter 1. Chapter 2, five self-evident truths. Five truths of which the document asks the world to take judicial notice. That means these are so obvious it doesn't require proof. We hold these truths to be self-evident. He said that all men are created equal. That's number one. Number two, they're endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. Number three, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, and on it goes. Five self-evident truths, paragraph two. And then, paragraph two, he gives us two duties as men. Two duties in the face of bad government. What are they? Patience and action. Patience and action. You recall the words of the Declaration of 76. It says men will tolerate abuses for a long time, as long as they're tolerable. But then he says there comes a point when they get filled up to the gills and they have a duty to act. We are to be patient. We are not to try to overthrow every abuse of government. And further, we're not to try to overthrow every abuse of government that goes on for 6 months and a year. Further, we're not to try to overthrow bad government. As long as another election is coming up, another election cycle, we can try to do something about it. Patience must be applied, but there is an end also to patience. That's the message of our Declaration of 76. And when that patience runs out, you act. Well, how do you know when you must act? How do you know when the patience has run out? Well, paragraph 2 gives us a four-part test of our Declaration of 76. It has 4 points. Remember that language about a long train of abuses and usurpations? When these lead invariably to the same object, an absolute despotism over these people. Well, that's the four-part test I'm talking about. That's part of it. We'll get to that, Lord willing. So paragraphs 1 and 2 give us the laws of nature, discusses those five self-evident truths upon which all of the reasoning of the conclusions of the Declaration of 76 must rest. A fella can't reason. You can't soundly reason unless you've got some fact that you don't have to prove. Because if you have to prove it, you started reasoning before you have a fact. That's upside down, as Blackstone points out. By the way, all of the law of the city is upside down like that. Blackstone points that out too, using the examples of the canon law, the rescripts of the popes, they're upside down. The reasoning they put first. The Declaration of 76 is a common law complaint. The facts come first. things that are so obvious you don't have to prove. Your Honor, Your Honor, it's look out the window. It's raining out there. It's pouring down rain. Well, the judge in a case like that is entitled to take judicial notice that it's raining outside. That's an example that lawyers, or I should say, yeah, lawyers like to use to describe what self-evident truth is, something of which you can take judicial notice. You don't have to prove it. And then from that fact, okay, knowing this, then you start your reasoning process, not the other way around. That's what our Declaration of 76. And then he lays down after that four-part test that says we must act if it's fulfilled. We'll go over that. And it tells us this is how you know when you're supposed to do something and what you're supposed to do. Man, it gives us a roadmap, a good one. Why is it ignored? Facts proving tyranny. That's also there. Begins in paragraph 2 of our Declaration of 76. Facts proving tyranny, number 1. Paragraph 3, he says, here's a fact. There are no local laws. They're trying to get rid of, King George is trying to get rid of local governments. Paragraph 4, he's suspending local laws. He, by decree, has suspended them. Paragraph 5, he has forbidden local representation in government. He did away with that. Paragraph 6, he has abused our representatives that we have elected to send to government. We did it of our own accord, and he's abusing them. That's paragraph 6. Paragraph 7, he has thrown our representatives out of government. He has locked them out. Paragraph 7. The election of representatives he has banned by decree. Paragraph 8. The habitation and use of land, he has barred us out of land. Paragraph 9. All of these things, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 abuses there about no local laws. He has taken away local government. Those 6 abuses, every one of them, directly contrary to the fundamentals of our law of the land, our common law. Our common law is all about local law, local government. And it's all about, at the bottom, we call it the law of the land for a very important reason. It's because it's opposite of its great antagonist on every continent through the ages, the law of the city. And the law of the land demands the use of land. And they complained. They said our forebears complained, said, England has locked us out of land, will not let us use land. There's land out here. It's not being used. Why is it the policy of our common law that land be used? Well, because God said in his most fundamental trust settlement, his most fundamental agreement, his most fundamental decree with Adam's race to be fruitful, multiply, and scatter out over land. It is our land from which the common law arises. It comes from the skies, from the creator of all things, to the land, and that's where we get it from. And that's been the belief and teaching of our common law, our law of the land, since the very beginning, since centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries ago, and that's why we call it the law of the land. That's why Langton in Magna Carta, writing the document Latin, called it Lex Terra. Lex land, or lex law, terra, land. The law of the land law. And then he says, after he says no local laws, he's trying to get rid of our local governments. More important what goes on in your house, by the way, than what goes on in the state house. More important what goes on in your house than what goes on in the state house and the White House. That's where government is. The more local, the better. Better the state house than the White House. And better your house than the state house. But if what goes on in your house isn't good government according to God, his principles aren't being ruminated, contemplated. If they're not done so there, then what goes on in the state house and the White House really won't matter that much. Nothing's going to stay anyway, even if changes are made. or common law, or law of the land. Second, no local laws. Second, paragraph 10 of our Declaration of 76 complaint says no local courts. He's trying to take away our local courts. Paragraph 11, the Declaration complains that King George wants to make judges dependent on him, to not be independent courts, to be bound by somebody else, somebody else's will. The president controls the courts. The king controls the courts. The Congress controls the courts by their legislation. Well, in the final analysis, that's not a common law government. Common law government is that all three branches of government are absolutely independent of the other. They'll have to follow the other if they don't want to. Now, if they want to join with the other, and the Supreme Court of the United States wants to say, yes, what the legislature, what Congress has done here is okay. They can say that if they want. They can join them. They can enforce legislation. But if they believe in their heart of hearts and in their independent judgment that it hadn't ought to be supported, they need to say so. No common law courts. Judges made dependent. Paragraph 11. Paragraph 12. Bureaucrats are sent into the country to thwart the first principles of our law of the land, or common law, bureaucrats. Hordes of officers to eat out our substance. I think that's the language. Well, not hordes of officers, but it says eat out our substance, to consume what we have. What good are bureaucrats? They consume everything. They produce nothing. They consume everything. What good is a standing army? It produces nothing. It consumes everything. Well, we've got this army out here. What should we do with it? Well, let's go to another country and kill people. That's what we're doing now. For what? Well, nobody really knows. Nobody really says. They make stuff up as they go. One of our founders said, and I say this softly, it's for an adult audience, but he said, a standing army is like a standing male member. The trouble with it is, it's too handy for foreign excursions. And that's what we're doing now. Just foreign excursions. But those are bureaucrats, officers of government that are useless. They're not good for anything. That's why we don't want them. That's why, of course, our Constitution says you're not to have a standing army. Wow, do we see the results of that. Now they've turned the army on us. They've taken away the Posse Comitatus Act and said, well, we've got a standing army. We'll use them on our own people. Let's keep going here. Paragraph 12. Paragraph 13, peacetime army. Peacetime army occupies. That's all about thwarting our common law courts. Our common law. Bureaucrats, peacetime army. Paragraph 13. Paragraph 14 complains that King George and his cronies are trying to replace the law of the land with the law of the city in our common law courts. Martial law. Martial, that means military. What is a law of the city? It's the opposite, the antagonist of our law of the land. But what is it? It is martial law. Martial law at heart. Sam Adams came to this conclusion, wrote a little piece on it right at the beginning of the Revolution. I didn't look it up on the internet. I don't remember the name of it, but he analyzed what is the, I didn't say it this way, bureaucratic law, administrative law, martial law. You see, the law of the city is the law of force, raw and ugly. And in modern times, the law of the city, the civil law, is best understood, best known as the civil law of Rome. And indeed, it is the Code of Justinian that embodies the law of Babylon, the law of the city. The Code of Justinian, a Roman emperor, about 500 A.D., he compiled all the law of Babylon as it had come to Rome through places like Pergamos. All over the world, the law of the city, Pergamos was one of the main places, came to Rome, had gone down to Egypt, of course. We can read about that in the Bible, the law of the city. The Pharaoh was God. That's the law of the city. But it came to Rome. The Code of Justinian was formed, and the Code of Justinian rules almost every country on the face of our planet today in two forms. The Code of Bismarck, the German form, the Code of Napoleon, the French form, and then, of course, the canon law of the Church of Rome. Those three codes are all substantially the same code. They are the law of the Roman Empire, the Justinian Code. Those codes are codes for dictators, emperors, if they are imperial. And this martial law, and at bottom, what I'm driving at is this code had arisen anciently, even before the code of Justinian, out of the law, most recently, of the Roman legions. The law of the Roman legions is the city law, the law of the city, the law of Rome, the code of Justinian, administrative law, bureaucratic law is founded upon the code of Justinian. We have it in our country. It is the great antagonist to everything we believe and everything we hold dear. I mean, who would be foolish enough, silly enough to argue that administrative law is of any value to us? Consider. Administrative law, bureaucratic law, had no force in America until FDR. Had none, nearly none. There was no administrative law. Everything about it, all the principle that we used to fight it in our common law, flipped upside down during that time. The switch in time to save nine justices, Justice Jackson, switched and supported the New Deal and all the bureaucratic law, the turning upside down of everything that we understood about our common law that would keep bureaucratic law out. Well, I diverge on a frolic. Keep with the outline. I want to get through this if I can. Just the outline, and Lord willing, we continue with breaking it down blow by blow after that if I have an opportunity. Then he complains. He complains, paragraph 15, our Declaration of 76. The King of England conspired is the word that upon which I ought to camp here for just a minute. Conspiracy is a crime. Conspiracy is not a theory. If there's anything in this world that of which we can take judicial notice that doesn't need any proof, is that men have conspired together to overthrow freedom. They've been doing it ever since Babylon. Babylon was a conspiracy. Conspiracy is the law of the city. It is the greatest device. We used to call it, and it really wasn't accurate, but we talked about back in the 60s and 70s, espionage. Espionage was the French word for spy, but everything that went with it, all of the subversion, all of the secrecy, that's the law of the city, secrecy. They don't have open public trials in the rest of the world. They have secret inquisitions. It's all in writing. The lawyers don't get up and make a showboat out of things. They don't argue before the jury. There is no trial. There's no combat before the jury. No parties. No lawyers for parties fighting for people. No fight at all. Just secret inquisitions. That's all it is. Well, that's what conspiracy is all about. Conspiracy has two elements. The government loves conspiracy. They love it. And Justice Jackson's the one that said, conspiracy is the darling of the prosecutor's nursery. Boy, if they can't try to indict a fellow for anything else, they'll indict him for conspiracy. Because he's friends with the wrong people on the wrong day. He associates with the wrong folk. Conspiracy. Two elements. Easy to prove. That's why it's the darling of the prosecutor's nursery. Two elements. An agreement, number one. Number two, to commit a crime. An agreement to commit a crime. Is it criminal to take money for your presidential campaign? From the Saudi Arabians, from the Islamic States, from Communist China, to steal it from children, victims of an earthquake down in Haiti or a hurricane and all those things together? Is that a crime? Is it a crime to form a foundation where other people can agree together to do that and they can all profit? Yes, that's a crime. It's an agreement to commit a crime. It's called conspiracy. That's what the Clinton Foundation is. It is sophisticated means that exacerbates the sentence that's brought against, declared against the conspirator. Well, it says here that the king conspired, paragraph 15, with his cronies. Remember, the king, as nice a guy as he was, of England, which one of the chief shareholders of the British East India Company, the trading arm of the Bank of London, that told the Americans they couldn't trade with anybody but the British East India Company. A monopoly against the common law, by the way, that kind of a monopoly then says you can't have freedom of association. You cannot associate yourself in contract with whom you wish. You must buy, sell, and trade with us, with whoever the bank says you have to buy, sell, and trade with. You're using their money, by the way. You can't use it anyway but what they say. They have a monopoly on that, too. Now, does that apply today, or doesn't it? Is there a monopoly on money in this country? Of course. Where in our law is a monopoly on money allowed? It's not. Never has been. But the central bank has got it. They've worked it. That's conspiracy. It's crime. Conspiracy to control the price of the dollar. That's a crime. That's an agreement to commit a crime. The Bible says that chiseling weights and measures is a capital crime. You know, there's some things that a fellow can do, some crimes a fellow can commit, that strike at the very foundations of his own country. If you go to the Bible, you discover, as you will in every country of the world, every country will have capital punishment for whatever strikes that they believe strikes at the foundation of their own society. I'd like to point out France. I may have mentioned this before, but France used to say, I don't know what they say now, they used to say, we're not barbarians like you fellows in America. We don't believe in capital punishment. They didn't have to say it, but I know. They have capital punishment in France, and they always have had, for one thing, treason. Treason. Every country, every people believes in capital punishment, and they will kill you for treason, if nothing else. Ask a legionnaire, a foreign legionnaire, a French legionnaire, there's a death penalty for running away in battle. You better believe there is. If I falter, push me on. If I stumble, pick me up. If I retreat, says the legionnaire, shoot me. That's his motto. So, chiseling weights and measures, says God, strikes at the heart, at the very survival of the life of a people. Therefore, he says, it is a capital crime. Well, that's conspiracy. He has a list of conspiratorial things here. Well, about a dozen of them. Well, not quite. Let me look here. Let me see. The king conspired, that's crime, conspiracy, to, preposition precedes every one of these, to overlook England's constitution, paragraph 15. England's constitution? Why were the Americans worried about England's constitution? Because England's constitution was their constitution, that's why. They said on the 14th of October, 1774, the first convened at Congress, I believe it was in Annapolis, Maryland, but they made a resolution. And they said, we're entitled to the rights of our Constitution. The Americans said that in 1774, the rights of our Constitution. And most particularly, they said, most specially, the right to trial by jury. They called that a right to their Constitution. Well, what was their Constitution? Well, it was their common law, their law of the land. It is their law of the land that said, we're protecting your right to trial by jury, your right to remain silent, your right to freedom of association. Those are all creatures of our common law and don't exist in the rest of the world. Well, they said the king conspired to overlook England's constitution. That's our common law. And it's still, by the way, our constitution. And our constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government. It is the common law. What is the common law? It's due process. That's what it is. The law of the land. According to the law of the land, says that other piece of organic writing, organic law for Americans called the Northwest Ordinance for the governance of the territories north and west of the Ohio River. Well, the king conspired with cronies to overlook England's constitution, to let bureaucrats legislate. That's called administrative law, regulations. King conspired with cronies, paragraph 16, to quarter soldiers in homes, to quarter soldiers in homes. Well, what does that mean? That means that the eyes and the ears of government are in your house with you, listening to everything you do with your family. Privacy is not, it's not so bad, it's just a burden, you got to feed them. They're there to report on what your family talks about. They eat meals with you, they live in your home. That's the principle here, by the way. That's why our Constitution, of course, and our Bill of Rights says you can't do that. King conspired to shield colonists murderers, murderers of the colonists, paragraph 17. Huh. You ever hear of sovereign immunity? Immunity of government employees? They can do anything they want. Oh, I'm sorry, I shot the wrong fella. I'm sorry, we busted into the wrong house. We thought the warrant was for the guy next door, and we're sorry we killed your baby. We threw a flash grenade in the window and landed in his cradle and blew his head off. We're sorry. I'm not making these things up. These things have been in the news. Oh, but you can't prosecute us. We're shielded. We can act as recklessly as we want. Sorry, we didn't aim to. We're just doing our job. We didn't aim to? Well, try taking a pistol or a shotgun and firing it into somebody's house while they're having a cocktail party and see if you don't go to prison for murder for the rest of your life or go to the electric chair. That's murder. That kind of negligence rises to the level of murder, even if you didn't particularly decide to murder some particular person. Well, government employees say those kind of things just like the Declaration of 76. They're shielded from prosecution for murder. A king is conspired with cronies, his cronies, that means the British East India Company, the big corporations, we would say today, and the banks, all together. The insurance companies are all lumped in with that, by the way. Paragraph 18, conspired to cut off trade. Cut off trade. Can we trade the way we want today? No. This fellow sitting in the White House now, he's trying to correct some of that. He did get rid of the Pacific Trade Agreement. It was so woefully unfair that it cut off trade. It cut off our trade. It cut off our ability to make profit. I just discovered not long ago, I've been trying to find somebody to print print a book. And I was directed, finally, to a place in California, Southern California, Los Angeles, talked to a lady there. She said, we can get it done, we can get it done quick, and we can get it done cheaper than any printer in the United States. I said, how? Well, I said, we printed in China. And that was when I discovered that the largest, more Bibles in the United States, Bibles, specifically Bibles, are printed in communist China by the only company in communist China, the only printer licensed by the government of China to print Bibles. The Chinese figure that if they can make money off of us with slave labor printing Bibles, and they do, by the way, that they can do more damage against us getting our money. They don't care how many Bibles come back here. They think they're books that would do more damage to us than good anyway. It's more fair to them. They're printing Bibles to sell them in America, all because of this trade agreement. Crazy stuff. Cut off trade. We can't trade with each other because of that. Can't even sell Bibles. They've undercut us with slave labor. King has conspired with cronies to tax without consent. Paragraph 19. People magnify that as though that is the thing that caused the colonists to no taxation without representation. Well, it was a big thing. It still is a big thing because it's the taking of property without due process of law if there's no representation. That's all it amounts to. Without the common law, you see, you follow the common law, you go through a certain process. If you're going to take my life, liberty, or my property, that's my money, from me, then I only ask that you do it according to the course of the common law. Follow the course, and if you come to that conclusion, you're given that authority, fine. But, of course, today we aren't. Who would argue? Again, who would argue? Who would be silly enough, absurd enough to argue that the IRS follows due process when they go into your bank account and take your money without notice, and the bank just goes along with them? Of course, the bank's working for them, right? It's all one big happy family. I've heard people say for years, and I understood what they were saying, and I still understand what they mean when they say this. But they say the Federal Reserve Bank is neither federal nor does it have any reserves. Well, that's true, fundamentally. They say it's not the government. It's not federal. No, in one sense it is, and I see what they're saying technically, but in another sense, it's just like the Bank of London was in England at the time of the Declaration of 76. was signed. The Bank of London controlled all commerce in England and all commerce that pertained to anybody in the Roman Empire. That was us. The Bank of London, the trading arm of the Bank of London, with the British East India Company at any given moment in time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at least 2,400 British East India Company ships were on the high seas. Not in port. That's not counting the ones in port. I'm talking about on the high seas. That's how powerful that company was. And that was the trading arm of the Bank of London. They weren't an entity to themselves. Well, that's what's happening today. The banks then go along with the IRS, no due process. I've known of many people who've had money, bank account, thousands of dollars just disappear. No due process of law. They say, well, we didn't due process. Congress said we could do it. Well, Congress saying it don't make it due process. Do we have to say that? I suppose we do. People get to thinking it is. Paragraph 20, King conspired with cronies, we're talking conspiracy here, to deny trial by jury. Paragraph 20 of our Declaration of 76. Again, most precious to Americans, they said that when they wrote to England, you have denied us the rights of our Constitution, most especially the right to trial by jury. Paragraph 21, King conspired with cronies to bring false criminal charges against Americans. Wow. The prisons in America today, and especially the federal prisons, are filled with political prisoners. Filled. Now, there might be people that did something that was objectionable to somebody, but there's a lot of people in federal prison that have committed no crime at all. And they didn't get a good jury trial. They got false criminal charges, paragraph 21. Paragraph 22, the king has conspired with his cronies, the British East India Company, to spread civil canon law in these colonies. Paragraph 22 says that you have established a law in a neighboring province with the specific intention of extending that false foreign jurisdiction into these colonies. What was he talking about? He was talking about the Quebec Act, of Parliament. The Quebec Act, which had just recently been passed, said that people in Quebec could have the canon law for their law, and the common law would be of no force. They were French, you see. The canon law, they were used to that. They were Roman Catholic, the canon law, the law of the city. And that's what they got. And the object was to spread it down into the colonies. You see, the law of the city comes in many forms. It comes in admiralty law. It's a martial law, see? So admiralty, military law, martial law, the canon law of the Church of Rome, of course, the Pope is emperor. That's canon law. And administrative law, the French came up with that idea. But all of those labels, all of them, are the labels for the same thing. The law, the single will, it's a law by men, a will of men, a single will, telling everybody else what to do, does away with the jury, all the other things that go with it. That's the law of the city. It's a martial law. It's designed for easy control. It's designed to get instant obedience to the government. Paragraph 23, King conspired with cronies to breach charter promises, paragraph 23. Charter promises, when the colonists came here, founded the colonies, they did so under charters, papers that had the king's signature on it, given authority to do this, that, and the other, to have this land and to have self-government and to direct your own destiny. Well, over time, the Bank of London, under the power of the British East India Company, begin to thwart those promises. By the way, that's freedom of contract, freedom of association, and upholding of a person's promises. That, of course, comes out of the Bible. Bearing false witness, keeping your word, doing what you said you're going to do. That's a fundamental principle of the commandments. They call the Ten Commandments. And it's throughout the Bible. And also, it's a law of nature kind of a principle we can recognize. It's important. Because we enforce promises here. It's part of our culture. Has been in the past. It's our common law. Comes out of the Bible, too. Because we do that, we have been an engine of wealth likened to that which the world has never seen among the race of Adam ever. An engine of wealth and prosperity beyond anybody's wildest dream. Because, why? Well, we have a legal tradition that will enforce promises when people falter and don't keep them. We go to court, and the courts will enforce promises. That's our common law. Paragraph 24, the king conspired with his cronies to legislate by distant decree. Government from across the pond. Local government was being denied all along, as we'd said before. Fascinated by the story of Oklahoma. The five tribes went there that they said were civilized, whatever that means. What it meant was that they had their own law. They had their own newspapers. They reduced their language to writing. The Cherokees were most famous for that. They were very prosperous in Oklahoma. But the white man came in, and he was not subject to their laws. He was subject to the law of the federal court, for example, in Fort Scott, Arkansas, on the edge of the Indian Territory. But they knew if they went into the Indian Territory, they could get away with about anything, and they did. And every cutthroat in the Western Hemisphere migrated to the Indian Territory. There was no law there. It was lawless. Judge Parker at Fort Scott sentenced over 160 men to hang. The short time, relatively short time, he was judged there in the federal court, having jurisdiction over white men in the Indian Territory. But when Oklahoma became a state in 1907, that madness continued until 1907. The feds couldn't stop it. They tried everything. But as soon as Oklahoma became a state and divided into counties, and there were sheriffs in every county, there was immediate, by comparison, immediate order. Why? Because government was local. Sheriffs were local, elected by the locals. And all of the madness just went flat, like a busted balloon, like a flat tire. All of the crime. All there was crime. I'm just saying it had all its steam taken out of it, all the wind out of its sail. The devil was having a heyday in Oklahoma. Well, paragraph number 25 is a decree. No. Paragraph 25 is a complaint that the king has decreed Americans outlaws. Outlaws, that's a common law doctrine. It's funny how the evil empire wants to use the common law when it benefits them. The doctrines of it, the teachings, the principles, but in most cases, of course, it doesn't, so they want to do away with it. I'm reminded of Sir Thomas More. He was behind having a lot of people burnt at the stake, but when it came time for him to be burnt at the stake, when they came after him, he demanded all of the common law rights that would protect him of due process that he had denied using the canon law of everybody he had burned at the stake. That's the way it always is. The evil empire will always do that. You got to watch them. Paragraph 26, towns burned and coasts ravaged. This is about the outlawry, see? Outlawry, that means in common law, by the way, that anybody that sees you has a duty to kill you. It's an ultimate kind of a thing. It's a declaration against a man, against the law's penalty, of the law's penalty against a man who is adjudged by a jury locally. This is the ancient doctrine, adjudged a criminal, and he has fled justice for the peace of the community. He was outlawed. That means, and the doctrine, if you watch the old Western movies, did come to America with variations. And it's still available, I suppose. Foreign mercenaries were sent to kill Americans. Paragraph 27. colonists were forced to kill their own kith and kin, paragraph 28. Violence and murder stirred up, paragraph 29. Paragraph 30, then, is notice of succession. Paragraph 30, petitions answered with injury, saying that their petitions were answered with injury. And paragraph 31 says that the appeals to our consanguinity are being ignored. Consanguinity. Our common blood. We're cousins. We're trying to appeal to you to stop this, and you're not stopping. Please stop. And the Declaration of 76 says their repeated appeals resulted in nothing more than repeated injuries. It got worse, not better. I've seen that in life. The kinder you are to some folks, the meaner they get. That's what they were doing. But when a person's engaged in evil, when they're part of the evil empire, when they're following the law of the city, which is the law of the evil empire, the law of Babylon, that's what's demanded. Of course, it makes a fellow feel guilty if you're dominating other people that way. Paragraph 32, trust and loyalty declared. Trust and loyalty. By the way, that's two different things. Trust is for God alone, him and no other, him and no more. No, you don't trust other men. You don't trust yourself. The Apostle Paul says, I don't trust your evaluation of me. He says to the Corinthians, the cruddy Corinthians, I don't even trust my own evaluation of my own self. I trust God's evaluation. That's why our national motto says, in God we trust, not in men we trust, not in money we trust. We trust in God. Well, then, if you're not to trust in men, that means you're not to trust your spouse. That's right. Well, then, what's my relationship with my spouse? Loyalty. That's different. Loyalty is different. Trust in God, loyal. I like to say it this way. Trust in God, loyalty to like kindred spirits. We are demanded to be loyal to those whom God gives us to be loyal to. I'm to be loyal to my spouse, loyal to my children, loyal to my brother. I know my brother's done some nasty things. I'm not to trust him, for crying out loud. I'm to trust God and be loyal to those of like kindred spirit. Well, that's the layout of our Declaration of 76. That's enough for tonight. Thanks for your patience and your ear for a little bit. What I'd like to do, and I hope I can, is now begin back at the beginning with the laws of nature's God, not now, but another time, and go through the Declaration of 76, blow by blow, and try to show its present applicability. It is readily applicable today. John, that's all I've got. Or Gerard, if you're there.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Gerard fell asleep on us.
Okay.
All right, I guess I'll pick things up until Gerard gets back.
Let's find my button.
Oh, there you go. You got to get an easy button. All right, anybody wants to get into the Q&A, hit star 6 to get into the Q&A. I think they'll tell you hit 1, 2, or something like that. I don't know. But star 6 to get into the queue. In fact, there's only one person in there right now, so it's an open gate there. Go ahead, Gerard. You got it.
Okay. A wireless caller, I'm going to unmute you. You got the mic there. Your name and state, please.
In Maine.
Can hardly hear you there. Speak, you know, turn your mic up or get closer.
How's that coming in now? Any better?
That's much better.
All right, sounds great. I wanted to thank Brent for that presentation. My point for getting into the queue was a different question that I had, and I wanted to ask if NLA had an opinion or if they've ever done a study or perhaps even a paper. I may have missed it along the way. If they'd done anything when state of Texas, there was a I would call them a left-wing organization, had done a grand jury indictment of the then-governor Rick Perry during the presidential campaign, and they used a grand jury to do that. They were even successful in getting a special prosecutor to get that indictment, and then I think it got tied up and was somehow some precedent was set where they never were successfully able to bring that to trial. Didn't know if NLA had ever looked at that case, you know, since we're trying to put grand juries together or grand jury administrations, if NLA had any opinion or if maybe Brent had some thoughts on that as we look to do that. I know in Maine where we're looking to, many people are hoping that President Trump will reverse the Obama administration's recent order in getting a national monument designation on significant acres of land in the northern part of the state. That some people are hoping that there may be some grand jury or investigative potential in that in our state. And we're just hoping that we might not make mistakes that had been done down in Texas. And I didn't know if NLA had looked at that.
You know, I remember that indictment, but I don't remember the particulars of what happened with it. You know, as far as why it stalled out or what happened with it. I do know we were looking at it. And I don't remember if John remembers that. I know we were made aware of it, but I know we didn't write any paperwork on it, though, for sure.
Yeah, bear in mind, whatever. We need to be very, very careful in what we get involved in. We can't take our eyes off the prize. We're doing habeas corpuses, not for people who have parking tickets, obviously. I mean, we don't want to get involved in that. We're doing habeas corpuses, for instance, for people who are facing jail time and they shouldn't be, especially because none of them, it doesn't matter who you are, you're not getting due process there. So we could, in actuality, do habeas corpus on anybody that's facing jail time to some degree anyway. But we do want to be a little careful. The other thing is we want to deal with the mortgage problems. We want to try to help the people relieve themselves from this mortgage problems, again, stealing houses from these people. And the tax... you know, these are non-judicial foreclosures. They're being done all across the nation. And also they do the same thing, a non-judicial foreclosure, tax foreclosures. Again, another crime by the state. And the people who are suffering most on the tax foreclosures are the people when they get into the hard times, especially the elderly people. You know, they get to a certain point in age. I didn't know this, but there are some states, I think it was Gerard that mentioned this to me or somebody, that there are some states that actually when you hit a certain age, you don't pay taxes on your land no more. But look, we shouldn't be paying taxes anyway. I mean, either you own it or you don't. Who owns the property after all? You know, why do you keep paying tax on your money? Every time it comes into your pocket, you get tax on it over and over and over again. It doesn't end. But anyway, look, we're doing those cases for two reasons. Reason number one, compassion. And trying to help people out, and we're getting people into the courts to help people with that, getting them some experience sitting in the courts, listening to the case, and assisting, maybe writing affidavits in order to help them, and also even trying to, you know, get them out of it, out of the whole system, to pull them away from that. And we've been successful on a couple of times, but, you know, most of the time we haven't been. So what have we been doing with all that? We're building a case of conspiracy. What exactly? They're removing papers from the court. They're ignoring habeas corpus. They're ignoring due process, which is habeas corpus anyway. Habeas corpus is only the statutory side of what is common law. And the habeas corpus was put there to enforce the common law, to require these people, because they needed a statute to tell them to give them due process. And that's why habeas corpus came up, I believe. And that's back, what, the 1500s or the 1600s. I'd have to defer over to Brent on that. But, you know, those things are the things we're doing. But what exactly are we trying to do? We're trying to get to the point, you know, as terrible as it might sound, on the one hand, and on the other hand, satisfactory, too, to some degree. But we don't want to be, you know, vindictive in any way. We don't want to be on some kind of a witch hunt. But it's time to put some of these people in jail. Because it's not until we start getting a case going where we actually do an indictment on a judge and on some of these clerks and even some other elected kind of individual. Once we get that done once and we get our foot into that court, then it's downhill from there. Then it's a slide. We need to get the United States Attorney General working with us, and we're going to be talking about him in the next week or two, because we're writing him a letter right now. We're going to be sending him our papers, and we're going to ask him to send over a few prosecutors, because we've got a lot to talk about. And after all, you know, he's all about the law, and we have nothing but lawless courts. We have so many problems, and you want to see some of our paperwork? We'll show you how lawless this is. We'll show you the Hammond case. We'll show you, you know, the case out there with the Bundys. We'll show you what's going on out there in Montana. We'll show you what's going on here in New York. We'll show you what's going on in every state of the union. Okay, people going to jail, and it's just it's status quo all the time in the courts. It's all about money. It's all about the state winning. It's all about people going to jail. It's all about that. You see, that's our fight. You know, we've had people say, well, you know, there was a guy down in Florida, I think he indicted Obama. It's going back 6-7 years, maybe more. And people thought that we should do the same thing. But that's not going to get us anywhere. It'll get us controversy, number one. We'll never accomplish that goal, at least not now. Maybe next year we'll accomplish that goal. There's a good chance we will accomplish that goal next year. And a lot more than Obama. You know, there are people that need to go to jail. But look, our goal is one, to save the nation. Only one way to save the nation, get the people to control the courts. Only one way to control the courts, take control of the juries. We take them and remove the ability of them tainting these juries, whether they grand or petite. We need to prevent them from tainting them. And that's the key. Once we accomplish that, really everything else fixes itself, and someone's going to go after these other people that need to go to jail. You know, National Liberty Alliance, again, remember, our purpose is to facilitate, facilitate an education, to facilitate the organization, the communications, to empower the people on a grassroots level. That's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. Now, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, that's all of us collectively working together in order to fight the corruption in the federal courts, to bring these people to justice, to show the conspiracy, to reveal enemies both foreign and domestic, starting off in our courts. But it's going to grow from there. But, you know, a lot of them, these rats will run. A lot of them will start doing the right thing. And look, we're interested in saving the nation. So they'll get a free pass for a while. But somewhere, either you know, someone in your state, someone in another state, someone in a county somewhere, you know, they're going to turn around and finally get to, you know, dealing with these other cases that you're bringing up and that you're thinking about. At some point in time, I'm sure Obama will face justice. I'm sure at some point in time, all of these people will face justice. And if not by man, then by God. And so one way or the other, it's going to happen. But we do have to stay focused. You know, we can't be like the dog with the bone looking into the water, and then we lose everything, you know. So sometimes I wonder if we're taking on too much. But the cases that we are taking on are important cases, you know. The Finnegan case is a huge, huge case for us. It's a huge case for everyone. You know, what they did to LaVoy Finnegan is just unbelievable. And if they could do it to him, they can do it to you, and they could do it to me. And they will if we don't do something about it. Again, another reason why people need to step up and put their time and their money where it needs to be. And we're not asking for a lot, but people need to do something. Everybody needs to do something. Working together, many hands, what's that saying, Gerard? Many hands make
something. Light work.
Light work, there you go.
Look, I don't know, I don't remember what the Rick Perry thing was, but we may have addressed some of that stuff. You know, when we filed cases, we had been working on a lot of wrongdoings the government was did, and we kind of wrapped all that stuff up into one in those cases. We mentioned everything. You know, they've been playing with us a long time, and we've addressed an awful lot of stuff if you read our cases. And that whatever was going on there might have been addressed in one of the informations or one of the things that we filed with the Congress in that. I don't remember, but I know a lot of those bigger issues, we've addressed them. They have no excuse to not know what's going on at this point because of all the stuff that we have sent them. So I'm pretty confident that, you know, we've addressed it one way. Either that or did like John said, we looked at it and said we don't want to get involved because it doesn't really fit what we're doing, or we've already addressed it in one of the papers that we sent in. Because we've sent an awful lot of stuff with their major... the major stuff that they're pulling on people, you know, and as far as informations and even in our Coruanto and the other, you know, what do you call it, the other paper that you filed there, the mandamuses, So, I mean, you read through that stuff and you look and you'll recognize some of the crimes that they're doing, and because we call them out on them. So I can't answer you specifically on that particular case, but I do remember we looked at it, and I don't remember the particulars of it. I'm sorry. But anyway, I'll go on to the next one. I hope that answers your question. Anything else before I move on to, we got Eric in the queue next. Am I still transmitting? Hello.
Yes, I hear you just fine. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to know how we answered his question. That's all. All right.
Well, that was good enough. I don't want to berate the point. Thank you for your time.
No, that's fine. Yeah. Okay. Next question is Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
Star 6 to get into the queue. Star 6. Anybody has a question or a comment?
Can you hear me? I was having a little trouble with my microphone earlier.
Now you're coming in. There you go.
Okay, cool. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Freedom of speech. Here, I want y'all's opinion on this. I've seen two license plates, these vanity plates, here in Atlanta. I saw them several years apart, but on streets parallel in town, in the city. One was a vanity plate that said assault, assault, A-S-S-A-U-L-T. And the other one I saw most recently, I think at the end of the summer, or in the middle of the summer of last year, it said satanic. And I was in the lane to the right of this fella who had the license plate that said satanic. And the fella pulled up behind him, and he was so discomfited by this guy's license plate. I could see him. He was moving back and forth in his car. He was uneasy. And to the point, he didn't wait for the light. He backed up and pulled out into a store's parking lot and drove off. So discomfited. Okay, and then I'm going to make a... I'm going to refer to this one video that came out some 10 years ago. I'm going to refer to it vaguely because it was really disgusting. I don't want to bring it up in anyone's mind. I don't want them to know what I'm talking about. But this video had, it's 15 minutes of fame. It was really gross. It had to do with bodily fluids. It was absolutely disgusting. I never saw it, but I had a friend who had a morbid fascination with it. Anyway, it had 15 minutes, and it faded away. But then my friend at work, who liked to discuss it sometimes, don't know why, but he was fascinated by it, said that he saw this guy in some American city who had found this video and was playing it for people out on a street, I think in a town or a city, I think it was a city, and it was to gauge their reactions to the disgustingness of this video. And, because as we are, we're so fascinated by petty controversy, so it seems. But my question is freedom of speech here. I want y'all's opinion on this. To me, all three of these things disturb the peace. And I think because, our rights have become so twisted, perverted, that people would argue that, oh, this is freedom of speech. I'm using the freedom of speech here. I'm allowed to do these vulgar things in the street. I'm allowed to have these vulgar, ugly words on my vanity plate, on my car. And so, as far as I'm concerned, it is, it's peaceably to assemble, freedom of speech, they're separated. But I think, also, as Brent says, no man has the right to do wrong. So to keep the peace, that's a big thing in the common law, is to keep the peace. So I want y'all's opinion on this. As far as I'm concerned, these things should not be allowed. We should not allow people to do these type of things and then claim it's freedom of speech, because it's not really what it's about. And if you could answer that, what I'm getting at, and then talk about what it really is for, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm gonna answer real quick on the vanity plates. I know over here in New York, there are certain plates that they don't allow you to have. Now, that's a real easy one because the plates are controlled by the state. It's a contract. They don't have to issue them. So if the state is issuing a plate that's disturbing the peace, that's probably pretty easy to deal with, because they should not be doing that, and the people should be able to speak out. You know what I mean? And it's not violating free speech to not give somebody a certain vanity plate, because the thing is not designed for that. It's designed to keep track of the car and all this other baloney. You know, that's just a side thing, and they should control it. So I would say if I ran off the road because I was looking at some offensive plate and it distracted me, I would sue the state for giving that guy that plate. And that would end that really quickly, you know? Just like Thornton sued them because they said a 15-year-old can only be sued for up to $15,000 when he crippled the girl. So he said, okay, that's nice. You made the law. You put the parameters for the driver's license. You control it. So therefore, you are the guys that are responsible. And he sued them, and that was a case that he won. So that's what I would say about that. As far as the deeper messages, I mean, that's has to do with administrative type thing there. You know, it has nothing to do with constitutional rights other than the fact of keeping the peace. And if these things are run by our government with our taxes, we certainly as taxpayers can complain about and do something about a nasty plate. That's my advice. But I yield to anybody else who wants to answer that.
Well, you made mention of the idea that no man has a right to do wrong. I think that that's abundantly apparent. I'd take judicial notice of that as a fact. No man has a right to do wrong, but the question then comes, to what level must the wrong arise before a government force can be applied to deal with it? And there's a whole lot of things that men do wrong all day, every day, that do not rise to a level allowing government interference. And God tells us, he tells us what that amounts to. Government and the law of the city, for example, increasingly wants to control every detail of men's lives, prospectively, looking forward. That's what legislation is. That's what a code does. It attempts to control the future. And increasingly, the codes become more precise and more intrusive. That's why our prisons are full, by the way, because men are being sent to prison for things that may be objectionable, may be wrong, and something they don't have a right to do, but didn't rise to the level allowing the jurisdiction of government to enter and assert force or threat of force. Well, that's what we have. Case in point, smoking marijuana. I think it's abundantly apparent that marijuana can be abused. It can waste your money, waste your life. So can smoking tobacco or drinking whiskey. All of those things can be abused. And men do abuse them, clearly. But does God give jurisdiction to government to interfere and say, no, you can't do that? That's the question. And when it comes to freedom of speech, it's the same thing. At what point, even though no man has a right to promote the evil empire and the deeds of darkness and Satan, as apparently this fellow's doing, does government have a right to interfere and stop him? But I agree with Gerard. In this case, it's the government helping promote Satan himself. And that'd be a question for the courts to hash out. I haven't followed that particular area of law that close, and I don't know what they would have done. But freedom of speech is not freedom to lie. It's not freedom to slander. It's not freedom to blaspheme. Slander and libel still against the law. But I point out also, hasten to add, it's not a crime to slander and lie. It's actionable, and the other fellow you slandered may clean your clock, take your money, and may get the court to help him do it. But whether it's a crime is quite another matter. Whether it make you a felon or something because you slandered somebody else. The question of jurisdiction and the level of criminality is what we're talking about here. The Bible makes it clear, of course, that killing another person with malice and aforethought, we call that murder, unjustifiable killing is clearly within the jurisdiction of government to do something about. That's Romans chapter 12, and Romans chapter 13. And it's all over the Bible. I'm just giving you a couple of examples. It's in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The jurisdiction of government does extend to murder. There's no question, and avenging murder. That's the one thing we can be sure about. But when it comes to freedom of speech, what you can say and what you can't say, it could be that it could be in this case, as Gerard pointed out, that it could be stopped because government is helping. This is government speech in a way. It's pretty touchy, that area of license plate. Go ahead, Gerard. That's all
Thank
I have.
You. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brent. Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good. And I'm surprised, you know, I can't remember in particular, but this subject came up and somebody wanted a certain vanity plate and New York State wouldn't issue it. And I was surprised that New York was I don't know what you want to say, moral or conservative as they were, they wouldn't issue it. It wasn't nowhere as bad as that what he's talking about. So I know that they do have a certain moral standard that they go by. I don't know who's putting them in, but it's something that you could look into. Anyway, I think we beat that subject to death. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. You got it? That's it, Eric? You done?
Yeah. No, that's it.
Okay. Okay. Looks like we got Colorado Ollie in the queue. I'm going to unmute him.
Hello.
Go ahead, Ollie. What you got going?
Hey, I watched John Lamb's video, his update today out of Portland, and I'm itching to hear Robert's update out there, and I know he's on. He should be on right now. Do you see him in
queue
now?
Yeah, he's in there. Robert's been ill, so I don't know if he's been in bed, so he probably...
I PM'd him on Facebook, and he says, I was there, so he's trying to get...
Oh, well,
I Skyped him a little bit ago, and he said he didn't have anything he wanted to add tonight.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, anyway, I'll give an update. As you can tell by my videos, I am almost there. I'm ready to go. Bought that new software, and I spent the day watching videos and learning it. It's got some... every time you get new software, it's got bugs in there that you don't understand. You have to approach it with a different file or whatever. But I'm ready to rock and roll with the NLA news. I really am.
Well, that's a great thing because, you know, I think it's going to be a very good idea, you know, as far as... us getting out there and getting the word out there and putting those videos on YouTube and even throwing them up on some of the Facebook pages we have, you know? I mean, everybody's on Facebook as much as I hate it. That's where the word gets out. And I think we need to have a better presence out there. And if we could do NLA News, and we could have a good time doing it. You know, Ollie, we have a lot of fun talking about this stuff.
Yeah,
You know, we could make it so that... it could be one of the more interesting news stations on the net, you know, and I'd like to see it go viral. And I know I've been pretty busy. I know you're waiting for me to send you some stuff, and I'll try to get that together maybe this weekend and send you some stuff so we can get going. But Ollie's been entertaining me with all his outtakes. We might even use some of them just for entertainment purposes. You know, the goof ups and the process of seeing him put together his news studio. Ollie's got a real news studio. I mean, it rivals Fox or anybody else. You know, and he bips in and out of it, and he bilocates and does all kinds of wonderful things. But anyway, seriously, I mean, we got it. I mean, we got one. He's sitting there with a shirt and a tie. We got the professional version I'll tell you what, it's as good as anybody else's news studio. It really is. So, you know, we'll report and keep it professional on that side, and we can even do a lighter side show, you know what I mean, on our take on the news, you know what I mean, just on a separate thing. But we got to get people used to tuning in, and then you know, it's NLA news, and then we turn them loose to the site. You know, we'll refer them back to the site for a particular story or particular information, and I think that'll do a lot to put the word out there and get people to look and come in and get educated, you know. And they'll be short too. We're not gonna have any long stuff, you know what I mean, in a minute or two or whatever, and then switch the subject maybe, you know what I mean, and do a quick you know, around the world in 80 seconds or something like that, you know, or eight, you know. And we'll see how that works. So, but anyway, so
something we could do right now. I need somebody to like take the recording of the Thursday night call and separate out the good interviews, you know, and then either it wouldn't be hard to do audio, but either pluck them out. Or go through and just give me the times on the recording, and then send me the recording and the times. Right, it wouldn't take long if I just had the times, or I could edit them out and then sew them back together.
But yeah, so you want clips? You want good clips of our meetings and our calls that we can incorporate into the news. And that's kind of what the idea of this is. And not only that, you know, we'll do that, and then what we'll do is we'll do maybe a commentary where Ollie and I kind of sit there and expand more upon, you know, a particular subject that somebody came up with, you know, and just get it out there. That's the whole, you know, every now and then we come up with something that's really good, and we'll throw them out there, you know what I mean? We'll throw snippets of them out there, and then we can refer the people back to that particular recording where it came from, so they can go. This came out of the NLA, you know, Monday night call or whatever, you know, on such and such. Go listen to the archive if you want to hear the rest of the discussion or something like that. You get the idea.
I'm really dying to too is just what's going on in D.C. with Trump and all that. I would love to start doing commentaries, and you know, here's the thing. Back there, everybody's got their mouth going, okay? And I've come to the conclusion nobody knows what's going on. I'll give you one proof of that. Nobody ever talks about God. Nobody ever talks about the devil. They're one-track mind. They're in their own little bubble. And they spout out their own little opinion. And none of them has got the big picture. Now, we could that one facet or one example we could do and put out the big picture and vet and put out raw, real news, you know, not false, fake news, but things that we can really vet. And give everybody the big picture, because it's what's happening now, even on social media. We're not getting the news on what's going on there. And then there's a lot of it that, you know, that's undercover and whatnot. But we could take that, for example, and sit there and commentary on it. And that would be another day of NLA News, you know, and then associate that with NLA Solutions. Did I lose you, Jared?
I'm sorry, I was muted out. I didn't realize it. Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, nobody wants to talk about these things. I'll tell you what, everybody gets religious when the car's running off the bridge. The first thing they go, oh, God, help me. Even the atheists.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
One other comment, Jordan, and I'll relinquish. But I bought that Pinnacle Studio Ultimate okay?
Oh, you
it
did,
just
huh?
Got a, it's got a screen capture on it, and it's as simple as this. You launch it, you get this little window. You tell it where you want to save it, and it asks you if you want to record full page or custom. You click on custom, you go to the page. Like I've got your Facebook page on there. It's got a cursor pointer in each corner of the screen. You grab a hold of the pointer, and you box out whatever you want to record. You hit record, and that's it.
Oh, you mean you can like you can lift it right off the page? In other words,
yeah, it is simple. Bam, bam.
Okay.
Bam, 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 and so I've got that figured out. So no problem on recording Skype calls. So,
well, that's
I'm making progress. Like I got run over by a train, I had to recover from that.
It's kind of a private joke. Nobody knows what all he's talking about here. He sends me a video and I click on it and you hear all this noise. And he's sitting with a straight face in front of that nice Fox News desk. And there's a window in the back. Next thing, here comes this train. It was so, you had to see it. I'm sorry that we're going off like this, but it's kind of one of the things you got.
Go to YouTube. Go to YouTube. Search Ollie, Ollie, Ollie Smith trains, and they'll come right up.
Yeah, then turn around after the train's gone, which seems to take forever. He about blew me out of my chair. I was like, "Well, is that supposed to be in there?" You know, we got to do something about these trains. They say, oh, man, Holly's on a tear. Anyway, it should be fun, and hopefully we get it launched soon and everybody participates and gives us more. Look, one thing that a news needs is content. And look, right now there's no shortage of content. We just have to pick and choose what we want. You know, the trouble with news is, you know, they're in the business of news, and when there's no news, they create their own. You know, we don't have to do that today. There's so much news out there. We just have to pick the right stuff, and we have to pick the real news instead of the fake news, right? So
yeah.
We won't have to make our own news, although we are making some of our own news, and we will report on the news that we make, like our court progress and things like that. You know, obviously we'll talk about that. With a blow-by-blow description as it comes in and when things start moving. And I think that's gonna be good, because if we can get a clientele, so to speak, a viewership, I guess is the right word, before we get into the, you know, real hot and heavy in the courts. You know, if we do get in hot and heavy, it's a good bully pulpit for us. You know what I mean? We'll be able to put the stuff out there, and we'll be able to put our version out there into the public, into the social media, and we'll do kind of like what Donald Trump does. We'll learn how to use this media for our advantage for a change. You know, they've been using it against us for how many years, and we're fine. What's that old German saying? You get too soon old and too late schmott? Well, we're getting schmott now. So, you know, let's see what happens, because I think, you know, it's high time anyway. So, that's what that is. Anything else, Ollie?
Oh, just one more comment. I'll tell you what, Trump learned social media. Trump is changing history with one line tweet.
One line tweet, yeah.
Anyway, I'll relinquish you on the next caller, but. I want to get this news going, and then it's ready to rock and roll and get some more interest in it. And we need help.
Yeah, because look, once we get going, it's going to be hard to stop. You see, what we want to do is we want to get people used to tuning into it. So we don't want to put one thing out and then have a big pause and then another thing. So we do need help, because. And even Ollie and I, you know, once we get going, we're going to need other people to come in. I mean, look, one of us could get sick. Things happen. Life happens. We'll need other people to put stuff on. I mean, we could do pre-recorded stuff. I mean, we're very versatile in how we could do it. You know, we don't have to do live all the time. We could just throw some stuff out there, and we certainly could use a whole team of people gathering stuff and maybe putting stuff out. But it all needs to be vetted, and it all has to, you know, we have to be careful of what we're putting out there. So everything has to be, you know, sort of come through a vetting process, you know, and we're going to need some good people that we can trust that can take the controls when Ollie and I can't, or I can't do it, you know. And so think about it. I mean, it's pretty exciting. It's going to be fun, and we'll see where it goes. Anyway, I guess that's
When we get going, if somebody makes a video or does an interview or whatever, and it's good, you know, just I'll put out the email address, you know, in the comment section below. Just send it to us, and if it's good, and I'll edit it, and we'll put it on. So, anyway.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff we could do. I want to offer Brent the job of doing the NLA rest of the story. He's got that Paul Harvey voice. I think he could do the rest of the story NLA thing, because there are so many interesting things out there, and Brent has enough of his own. We'll do even a Brent corner. You know what I mean? We'll throw some of Brent's stuff out there.
Brent Page too, or something.
Yeah. So,
and now for page two.
Right. I was thinking that tonight when you were talking, Brent, you were doing that little poem. I said, you know what? I was a big Paul Harvey fan, and that's what you reminded me of. For some reason, I got that thing. I said, this is like the Paul Harvey thing, you know? You know, the rest of the new information that you thought you didn't know, you didn't know.
Yeah. Well, I take that as a compliment, but I like to listen to him too. And the rest of the story, it was one of my favorite things he did. He did other things, but the rest of the story, the reason I guess it struck home with me, and as I get older, I realize that there's always the rest of the story, and seldom do we ever hear it. And it's the thing that really is fascinating. That's where the lesson is. And if a guy can dig it out, but why is it that people don't do that? I don't know. Paul Harvey became popular doing it. But the news media, they don't. Yeah, why would the news media do the same thing? But they don't.
They don't want you to know the rest of the story. That's why.
I guess.
But look,
one more story, Jared. I was years and years ago. I'm talking last century, years ago. I went into a small radio station here in northern Colorado for something or another. I was going to go out and take field strength reading for them or something. They were running around like chickens with their head cut off, and all excited. And I says, "What's going on?" Oh, Paul Harvey's going to do his news from here at 2 o'clock this afternoon. They were fit to be tied. Okay, and I wish I could have stayed and met him, but I didn't. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. Are you going to say Paul Harvey can sell snowballs to Eskimos? I'm telling you.
he was great. He was absolutely great. And he had the most respect of everybody in radio, I'll tell you that. He was great. But we need to do a page, too. We do. Yeah.
Look, along with Brent says, you know, look, at what worked then will work again. You see, it's the same thing. We just got away from it. People are the same people they always were.
Oh, I've got one for Brent already. Okay. La-di-da-di-da, and then God made the National Liberty Alliance.
Anyway, hopefully we can get it off the ground here soon, and we have a good time with it, and we actually make some progress with it, because I know we will. You know, our intentions are proper and everything, and so I expect success.
Yep, I do too.
Anyway, thank you, Ollie. Okay, I'm gonna go to Fred now. California Fred is next in the queue. Fred, you've been patient. Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, this is to Ollie. Ollie, congratulations on your new service. One of the things I think you really should cover on your news service is the fact that no newspaper, no media of any kind has taken the National Liberty Alliance papers and put them out to the public. And they need to be shamed and disgraced into doing it. As soon as you become a news service, try to list it on Drudge, because you'll become a news feed and thousands of people will click on you because you're new. Anyway, I'm going to mute out and let you respond.
You know what, Fred? That's a great idea. You know, I mean, you see, we don't even know. That's why lots of heads are good, where this will spin off to, you know. And just what you said right there is a great idea. I'm sure Ollie agrees. So, okay. Anybody else got anything? We lost the last guy in the queue. Fred was the last guy. So if anybody has anything, speak now. Forever hold your peace. Unless you want to listen to Ollie me go over our news items.
Oh, I'm still here, Gerard. I'm still here, Gerard.
I know you are. I haven't kicked you out yet. No, you're good. Wait a minute. We got North Carolina, April. Go ahead, April. You've been unmuted.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. How's it going?
I'm hanging in there. I got an idea for something for the news.
Okay.
How about doing the Came on You corner for courts? For all the courts that we catch doing something wrong.
Ooh, I hope Ollie's got his pen out. Shame on you, corner. I like it. We have something. Talk about content. We just hit like four different things in 15 minutes, not even. I like that a lot.
Do something similar on Facebook, and it dawned on me that would be perfect to do on news to get people.
And you know, how many times do you read an article in some little obscure paper, you know what I mean, or whatever, that you know, or they put it, you know, in the middle or on the back where nobody can see it, you know, and people run across
Trump talks about how we got fake news out there. When they did my son's case, they totally lied when they put it in the paper. I mean, they fabricated the whole thing. And that's what made me come up with, shame on you.
You could actually do a shame on you and the rest of the story on that one. Shame on you, Hawaii, and here's the rest of the story. Anyway, that's a good idea. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's see. We got a wireless caller. I'm going to unmute. 9345, go ahead. Your name and your date.
Hey, Gerard, this is Joe in Maine again. I just wanted to give some information to Ollie where you said some other people weren't not in the queue. Ollie, I have some access to some software to do that audio work you were talking about. It's called Audacity. And maybe Gerard or someone, if we want to swap some information, I can get that to you. I don't currently have enough computing power to do this, but I have a friend of mine who used to edit some radio shows that I used to do, and he uses the software to do what you're trying to do.
Yeah, Audacity is good. I think I have I used to have a paid version that ran out. I think I might have an unpaid, a free version, because they started giving it for free. But I don't know if Ollie has it or not. Is this number that you're on, this wireless number, is this your normal number?
Sure this, is, yes, this is my
story. 9345. So yeah. I'll copy that and I'll give that to Ollie's my tech guy. Yeah. He knows. I'm not going to step in there because Ollie's doing all the tech stuff. I just I'll sit there and sound stupid and look pretty or whatever. Or look pretty and sound
exactly
stupid.
What he wanted to do, but I think he wanted to take some of the Thursday night call clips. And
yeah, Audacity will do it. I understand that. And I don't know if he has it. He might already have it. I don't know. But what I'll do is I'll copy your number down. And he's on. He's listening. And I'll have him. You guys can get together.
Well, I know John's talking about us all putting in a few hours a week, too, so that's why I'm sort of offering to try to help with that a little bit.
Okay, very good. And what's your first name again? I'm sorry.
I'm Joe. Joe Nugent, yeah.
Okay, Joe. Okay. Very good, Joe. And we'll be in touch with you on that because that's a good idea. Thank you. I think Ollie's back in the queue. I don't know if I can unmute both of you. Let me just see. Just stay right there because he may want to talk to you.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead, Ollie. I got you unmuted.
Yeah, Joe. I've tried Audacity. It's been so long ago. In the last 2 weeks, I've tried so many softwares. I'm software saturated, and I know about Audacity. I'm gonna have to give it a shot again because you are right. Audacity is very good. And then I'd like to say that we need to have a conference call on the NLA News because we're getting ideas a bunch. And I want about 30 or 40 people giving me some ideas.
Yeah, they can also, if they're technologically able to, they could do some of this work. You know, I know John knows how to use Audacity. You're not going to get him to do it, but he does. John's got Audacity, and he'll cut it in and out. I've even done some of it, Ollie. I can my free version. I've cut it up and used it. It took me a lot of time, but you know, if I spend more time with it, I'll get faster each time. You know.
Yeah.
you know me. I'm the kind of guy. I just go in and hit the buttons and figure it out without reading the directions, and eventually I figure it out. You know. But I was able to piece together an audio for John for one of the. That's how I did it for the PowerPoints. So I know that you can master it, you know. And, I mean, Audacity is a pretty good software. It's got some pretty high-tech stuff in it. But, you know, once you learn how to move some cursors around and different things for splicing and dicing stuff, it works pretty good. So, yeah, that's a good idea, Ollie. Maybe we could get something going where people will come in and give us their ideas and we share software or whatever it takes, or somebody who has Audacity will say, well, look at maybe you can cut. We got this clip over here on the Thursday call or the Monday call. Can you cut out minute such and such to such and such, and we'll build up a library of this stuff. And you know the nice thing about
also I don't know how many people's on the call, but let me give out my email again. So if you got an idea or whatever. Email admin@nlaco.co. admin@nlaco.co. That send me some ideas, or if you've got videos, send me some videos. If you got an interview or something, send it to me. We'll see about getting it on.
See, the nice thing is we can build up a library. We can pre-record stuff. And we could pick and choose so that, like I was talking, like you're not always going to feel, you know, up to it. So if we have stuff in the library, we could just grab something one night and throw it up there, something we've pre-recorded, pre-cut up, you know what I mean? So that's the goal. Look, we can get together, cut things up, paste things, make commentaries, and stick them in our library, you know? Of course, it won't all stay current. Some of it stays current forever, but some of it gets old quick. So we have to decide that. But, you know, nevertheless, like Paul Harvey stuff, it doesn't matter when you play it. So it was always good, you know, stuff like that, that has information in it that's entertaining. Those are fillers that you can use whenever, you know, and maybe that's what we'll use the Brent corner for or whatever. And the Shame on You corner, those are good fillers, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, great ideas tonight. Lots of good stuff here. Anybody who has any questions, get in the queue. We got a few. We got about eight minutes left or so, and we'll be done here. But encourage anybody that's got any kind of skills like that or is interested in this media stuff or to go ahead and get a hold of Ollie, and maybe we can get a thing going where we're working together and gathering stuff and putting our heads together. And, you know, I mean, look at, we even, you know, anybody's got a good voice too, we can feature different people. People get sick of me real quick, probably. You know, we put somebody else up there that can talk. You know.
You know what else I gotta do? I should make a Facebook page for NLA News. I never thought of that.
That's a good idea, and that's yeah. What we want to do. We want to get it out there on Facebook and these different things, you know, and Twitter and all that. But you know, the social media, and get people used to going in there looking for the news. And then yep. What you do is you like it and you share it. So it goes on, you know, everybody's timeline and all that other stuff that they do on Facebook. And, you know, it could go viral. It really could. It could go viral in a heartbeat. You know, my goodness. You see Ollie sitting there with the train coming in, his 10-gallon hat. It's pretty funny. It's different. You know, we're going to keep it different, you know. This should be a pretty interesting little trip here, you know. All right, we got, I think Fred is back in. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and knock you two guys out of the queue so I can get to Fred, all right? If yep. You guys are done, okay. Go ahead, Fred, you're unmuted once again.
Yeah, it's Eric again.
Oh, it's Eric. Oh, what did they do? Skip over Fred. Fred, if I knocked you out, get back in if you wanted to get in. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
So looking at some of the videos that John had put up, I got on the track of some of this unspeakable stuff, you know, this pedicate, this pizzagate stuff. I was really surprised to see that drive past this billboard and see this very attractive black woman and this very attractive man. They both look plastic, you know, the news reporters. But this one, the fellow, the man, you know, I just thought they were typical news reporters. It was just entirely plastic. But this man, he got suspended and had to get rid of all of his social media, I think at the turn of the new year, because he was trying to figure out if there was, I can't even believe this, and I've seen him a few times, on the news, it's, you know, 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., but he got suspended because he was trying to figure out, he was doing a story on whether or not Pizzagate was a legitimate thing, and they shut him down, and they blacked out all his sites. He had to do it. I guess he had to do it himself. His name is Ben Swan. Anyway, that's a story I would love to be able to get for NLA News. I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but we probably won't talk about it. But anyway, that's right here in my local area. But, I mean, the fact that they shut him down, it's just such a telltale sign that they really want to hide this. And, I mean, he might have been the only man at this caliber of this level of news, the CBS affiliate, that have done this story across the nation. But anyway, in New York, Gerard, you mentioned that the NYPD has Hillary. They have the goods on Hillary concerning this Pizzagate.
Yep. Yes, they do.
Okay. Well, here's my thing, and I didn't even want to mention this because, you know, who's going to listen to me anyway, but just the idea, I didn't want to mention it because during a few months back when Obama was still in office, because what if someone had the idea and they heard anyone mention it on the NLA call, so you never know who's listening, but that she could be pardoned. But now that Obama's out and Trump is in, here's my thing. If the NYPD doesn't do anything with this, can we not then hold their feet to the fire for, I don't know what you would call it, but a failure to act when they should act? Imagine if this...
Well, look at it. If there's a crime that's committed, we absolutely could. But the thing is I think that there's things going on right now that Trump is going to go after, and he's just setting the... Look at it. He could have went... Can't go in and and do what he's doing until he sets the stage. I mean, look, we got corrupt judges, corrupt prosecutors, corrupt, especially New York City. And if they're going to go ahead and indict her in New York City, he's got to make sure that he's got the groundwork laid so that she doesn't get away with it, you know? And by the way, she couldn't get pardoned if she wasn't indicted. We can't do a pre-pardon here. So, the fact that she didn't get indicted was good. If she was smart, she would have gotten indicted, and he could have pardoned her, and it would have been over, right? But she didn't, so that was stupid on her part. So, I don't know. It's something that we don't really need to chase it right now. It's out there, and I think something's going to happen anyway. But it's certainly something that you know, as more evidence, and they got the evidence, and yes, believe me, it's going to break. And I don't think NLA needs to do anything about it, to be honest with you. I think it's going to happen anyway, because I think exactly like you said, as we come in and help and hold corrupt officials' feet to the fire, they're not going to want to hold on to that information. It's going to become a hot potato, and they're going to do something with it. That's my theory, and I think Donald Trump's already working on it. You know, it's like you see those shows where the cop comes in and does a bust, and they've already got guys on the inside, and they ruined the whole thing because somebody else found out about it. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice here. We don't want to jump the gun and do that. You know what I mean? We want to make sure that there's nothing, that they're not doing anything, setting up a plan, you know, that type of thing. So we'll just keep our eye on it and see what's happening. And if there becomes a point where it makes sense for us to say anything, we will. But right now, I don't think we need to get involved in it, to be honest with you. I think it's going to take care of itself with everything else that's going on. And we don't want to upstage all the investigations and stuff that are going. Look, they got to get rid of all the rotten politicians down there and all the other stuff that's going on before they think about taking on Hillary and the likes of her and Obama and that. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay, Fred, I'm going to try not to knock you out. I didn't do that on purpose, by the way. Go ahead. Okay.
I wanted Ollie's email. I couldn't write it down, and now I have a paper and pencil. But I wanted to say one thing first. They're gonna try to block you on all these social medias. Open an account at Gab. It's uncensored.
Well, you know what? What is it? Gab.com, Fred. I was gonna say send that information to Ollie too, and we'll do that.
Yeah. That's why I want Ollie's email.
yeah. Ollie, go ahead, pipe your email in. It's what is it? admin@nla. .co or something like that.
She'd take a fleet break.
Wait.
What do I got to do? Unmute Ollie manually here? And make me work.
Yes.
Where the heck
did
he go?
Gerard.
That's okay. Where is he? Jan, if you see him, I'm looking through. I don't see. Let's unmute Ollie. I think it was admin@NLA.
That's right, if you find him.
admin@NLA. .nlaco.co. Did you get that?
Yeah. admin@nlaco.co.
It's, yeah. Pretty sure that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, because for your news, you're going to need a special website that's going to say, like, news for NLA. Simple, sweet, straight. It goes right into a box.
NLACO.com. Yep.
News at NLA. They'll go right into your inbox in a special email account. That way, all the court reporters can send it right to you without any bull about it.
Right. Yeah, we'll do that. It's a good idea. Always good to have an alternative. Thank you, Fred.
Okay, I'm going to meet out soon. It's 9:00. I'm sorry, I carried the ball to the end again.
Yeah, I'm going to take Jim from Pennsylvania. because he's been waiting patiently. We got a couple of seconds here. Go ahead, Jim. Pennsylvania Jim, you're unmuted. Speak now or forever
okay,
hold
your
peace.
Okay, am I on?
Yes.
Okay, I got to ask a quick question about the last paper that went out.
Okay.
I just want to make sure it was corrected. I want to make sure it's correct. On the fourth page, it says the only reason the United States and many unarmed countries around the world remain free today. Is that correct? Unarmed countries?
I think that's what it says. They're unarmed, and the reason they remain free is because of us.
I thought it should have been armed countries.
No, a lot of countries have been like Australia and that have been disarmed. They say, oh, you can own a gun in Australia. Yeah, you go and try it. See what you got to do to own a gun in Australia. They took all the guns and smashed them in the streets and burned them. The average person in Australia doesn't have a gun. It's considered a free country. But the only reason they're free is because they're getting a fractional reserve of our freedom. The minute they unarm us, guess what? They won't be free anymore. You know, the rest of the world is watching us. And they get a portion of the freedom that we have out there. Because as long as we're there, we're the beacon of hope for them, you know. And basically, Australia is an unarmed country. I don't care what they say. You know, you can own a gun, you can skeet shoot. Nah, I don't think so. You know what I mean? You got to be part of the elite to own a gun in Australia. You see what you got to, the hoops you got to jump through and the things that you got to follow to own a gun in Australia. Used to be a free country. Used to be everybody was armed in Australia. They were like here, not anymore. So if they consider themselves free, there's only one reason that they're considered free. I think that's because they still got us to look at as an example.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that that is the correct word and shouldn't be armed countries.
Now, well, we consider them unarmed, even though they may be armed. Like somebody just tweeted me here that Australia, the Australians buried their guns in the desert. They're just waiting. So maybe that's a misspoken that they're unarmed. But basically, you know, I don't know if you saw those videos when Australia went and collected all the guns up and then took them and cut them in half and ran over them with bulldozers in the street. And the people stood around and watched them. You know, that was the point. They should have been picking them guns up and starting a revolution right there when they were disarming them, you know?
I just want to make sure of that word. But I have another quick item here. I just thought it was so big that Ron Paul is going to be on Wednesday. Ron Paul is going to be addressing the Arizona State Finance Committee. Uh-huh. And the Arizona State Finance Committee will consider legislation HB 2014 officially defining gold and silver and other precious metal as legal tender.
Well, I think it's defined as legal tender in the Constitution anyway, is it not?
Yeah, but is it recognized, though?
Well, it should be. It's in the Constitution, though.
Ron Paul is going to go to Arizona and get them to recognize gold and silver as legal tender.
I'm a little upset with Ron Paul right now, and it's the end of the show. You got me started on a subject here we shouldn't have started now. But Ron Paul, I love the guy, and he's right. He did a lot of good stuff. But, you know, when Donald Trump did his address to the both sessions of Congress, he was over there tweeting in between, you know, tearing down. Oh, where are you going to get the money from? What are you going to do? Print more money? Oh, you're building up NATO, blah, blah, blah. Look, Donald Trump did more in 45 days than Ron Paul did in 45 years. So he shouldn't be undermining Donald Trump because he doesn't agree everything that he says. And again, this is another example of let's make a new law. It's not going to help to make a new law. Let's follow the ones we have. Oh, we need a Marriage Protection Act. No, you don't. When you put a Marriage Protection Act in, then what is marriage? It's what you define it as. We don't need them to define marriage and to protect it. God has already done that. It's in the Bible. We don't need the government to tell us what it is. Yeah, gold and silver, legal tender. Guess what? The Constitution already says that. Just How about if you don't follow it, we indict your butt? You know, I mean, I'm sorry to jump on you for this. These are all sound like good things, but sometimes we run around, and what they do is they have us treading a wheel like a hamster in a cane. We think we're getting somewhere, and we're getting nowhere. Look, it's about stick to the Constitution. That's what it's about. You know, we keep making these laws. Now, if they recognize it, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. I mean, right now, if I got a bill with you and I come and I give you a gold coin and you accept it, as far as I'm concerned, that's more important than what the government says. And actually, there are legal tender gold coins that the government prints because they have to, and they're out there right now. And so there are already legal tender gold and silver coins. So I don't know what this whole thing he's doing is. I really don't know that much about it. I'll have to look into it so I can respond more intelligently about it. But my knee-jerk reaction is that it's just more, I don't know, stuff to do to make you feel like you're doing something. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. To me, it's not necessary. Let's get back to the Constitution and let's enforce what we have. You know,
Ron, I just want to say one last thing before everybody goes to bed. I missed everybody up in New York with the Meet the Finnegan family.
Yeah.
I did go to Columbus and see Shalice.
Oh, good for you. Good.
So I just want that's all I have.
She's a great girl, isn't she? I mean,
it was very interesting. It was sad. I had tears in my eyes. I don't know if I was the only one with tears, but
she had the whole room in tears all night. You kidding me?
Okay, good night.
Good night. Thanks a lot. Okay. Well, with that, I think we're going to end here. Wait a minute. April, go ahead. You got 2 seconds. I'm running this over. We got to stop the recording. Go ahead quick.
Okay. While I was sitting here, I was just thinking of another idea that you can use. I remember hearing how Trump always said, well, he didn't say, but other people said he should have his own news show. What about having a hotline number that's just for him for when he wants to call in to say something?
Oh, we'll see how that works.
that would actually bring more people in, too.
Yeah. You know what? Write them down. Let's send them to Ollie on his email. And look, we're gonna go ahead and we're gonna set up a committee or whatever you want to call it for this news thing, because there's a lot of ideas out there and we need a lot of help. So people need to volunteer for this, and anybody that has skills needs to come on board too, because this is an everyday.
Whatever you need me for, I'm there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Goodbye. Good night.
Night,
thank you, Brent. Good. Thank you, John, Ollie, everybody else. Thanks for coming.